All right, we are plugged in and ready to go, and it's Sunday the 6th of May 2018. You're listening to the Kraz Files podcast with Adam, and as usual, as always, the podcast will go over to my website, krazfiles.com, C-R-A-Z-Z, and plenty up there to go through. Lots of great articles going up, original articles. If anyone out there wants to write original articles for the Kraz Files, send them to thekrazfiles@mail.com and put them in a file. Make sure they're grammatically okay, and put any links in or any videos you want, or let me know, and we'll put them up as an original article there in the new section. And as well, the podcast will go over to iTunes if you want to get them there. And I also put them over on Facebook, so the Kraz Files on Facebook, and Twitter as well. And there's a YouTube channel if anyone wants to have a look there, just liking some videos. And I put a lot of videos each day as well on the website. You can check out opensourcetruth.com, which is our other great website that we do. Lots of stuff going up there. And also check out Nexus Newsfeed. Guys at Nexus Australia doing great material. That newsfeed widget's on the Kraz Files, and also Renegade Tribune as well, if you want to look at some great articles going up. So plenty to go through. And we have a great podcast today, Wayne Bush. I consider you a friend now, Wayne, even though we haven't met, but done a lot of great shows together. And we are going to do another one today, so it's always good to tune in with you and go over such fascinating material and all your research. So how are you going? How's things on your end?
Everything's fine over here. I consider you a really good friend as well, so I appreciate all the emails we send back and forth, articles and links and stuff you send. So, yeah, definitely you're a good friend of mine. So, your podcast is really, really good.
Yeah, we've done a lot. And any new listeners that come in today, you can go to krazfiles.com and have a look in the podcast section there. And we've done a whole bunch. So I think we're really connecting the dots, Wayne, with the podcast. We've done so many, especially on NDEs and all these experiences, afterlife sort of material. We've done stuff on Hollywood and symbolism and language and so many things. So they're all up there on the Kraz Files for people to go through. There's actually a dude on YouTube, Wayne, that posts our podcast that we do. And they do very, very well on that channel. It's a guy that puts them up each time that we do them. So I'll work on trying to do that as well, getting some podcasts up on YouTube. But we are plugged in today, definitely, to jump into the rabbit hole with you. why don't we get started? Because, as always, you've got a lot of great material to go through. Why don't you bring in the start of the show? And as I said, I'm here on mute, so I'll come in and out when I need to. Okay. But you always have such a great amount of information to present, and that's why we do these shows. And I know people love them and appreciate them. You're a great researcher, so there's always so much to go through. But why don't you bring in the start of the podcast on your end and let us know the kind of theme of tonight's show for you, what you'll be sort of discussing.
Sure, Adam. Like I said before, I really appreciate you allowing me to come on your show and present, you know, what I'm finding with my research. There's not a whole lot of people that are affording me that opportunity, so I'm very appreciative. Just to give listeners who haven't heard me before a quick synopsis of my work, for over 20 years, I've been researching the meaning of life, why we're here, and what happens when we die. I draw from many areas of research, including near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, psychedelic experiences, language, including reverse speech, ancient texts, science, and also facets of pop culture, such as Hollywood movies and music. And it's my conclusion that the soul's tricked into reincarnating on Earth over and over again by interdimensional parasites, which can take any form they wish. They have created a matrix or illusion to imprison us in a low frequency or state of consciousness. All we need to do is wake up and remember the divine nature of the light we have within ourselves, and that upon death, we can immediately raise our frequency and create our own reality instantaneously by ignoring and avoiding the trap the Archons have set for us with their tunnel of light and the tunnel and light that they've created to lure us. And there they pose as our gods and spirit guides to convince us to return to Earth, where we are used as a source of energy or food for them, also as entertainment. I recently did an interview with Mark Gray on the subject of reverse speech, where I played over 150 examples. And today I'd like to spend just a few minutes to read a few more important ones I found since then, ones that are very relevant to my research. But I also want to touch on a post on a message board about the dangers of electronic voice phenomenon, or EVP, and then also spend a few minutes looking at the findings of a remote viewer named Brett Stewart, whose project has corroborated much of what I've been saying. And then I'd like to spend a great deal amount of time covering some hypnotic regression sessions that Italian researcher Calogero Grifosi has conducted. The content's mind-blowing, and I feel really gets to the heart of what's going on. And then finally, I'll read some emails I received from a very experienced astral traveler who has had well over 100 OBEs and has encountered the light, hell, astral entities, and has some really great tips and insight on what to do if one encounters this. So, I mean, just real quickly, I want to just touch on a couple of reverse speech reversals that I found. And I found that reverse speech is a good analysis tool. Now, there's this near-death experiencer named Eben Alexander, and he's had this number one bestseller book called Proof of Heaven, and he's probably the biggest speaker on the NDE tour, the circuit. And he's an agnostic neurosurgeon. Before he slipped into a coma where he lost all his brain's neocortex. And so he's talking about learning lessons and making plans to reincarnate here again with our soulmates. This was in a lecture he gave. And he's saying, he, quote, lessons of that love and then plan that next incarnation with our soulmates and come back in here. And then when you play that backwards, it says, Ray make karma. We scare most of them. See an Archon, get scanned. Last minute vow adds volts in the cell. So Re or Ra was the Egyptian god of the sun. And so there he's talking about, you know, how you get scanned. You see an Archon, you get scanned, and then you make this vow, and it adds volts in the cell as if we're part of a battery. Another near-death experiencer, Betty Eady, who had the book Embraced by the Light, she was being interviewed by Oprah Winfrey. And on the show, she's showing a visual what it's like for a soul to go through the tunnel towards the light. And she says, the visuals that you'll see here. And then backwards, she says, Gray, hiss, he'll eat your soul. And then there's another talk where Bob Monroe, he's an out-of-body experiencer on YouTube. It's called Wednesday with Bob Monroe. And he's talking about the demiurge, who he calls Ed, the entry director. And forwards, it says, he says, the first thing you need to do, and then you play that backwards, it says, we're in the game, we step in the surf, he says. And then later he's talking about the soul wanting to become human. And he says, so what you do in that process, and you play that phrase backward, and it says Archon, we're a, there's some unintelligible, and then he says force. So it says Archon, we're something force. I can't make out what it says. But he's actually contains the word Archon in the reversal. And then Jacob Rothschild was, he was trying to avoid an interview. He was coming out of somewhere, and he only said a couple words, and they were asking him about the New World Order, and he said, next time, to brush him off. And when he says next time, you play that backwards, and it says, now it's due. And then Ray Kurzweil is a visionary at the forefront of the transhumanist movement, and he was doing a TED Talk, and this movement's dedicated to augmenting mankind and merging us with machines and technology. And he's talking about our evolution. He says, the last time we expanded our neocortex, and backwards that says, gestalt, green owl that nabs you and I fell. And then later on he says, we'll expand our neocortex by connecting it with the cloud. And when he says the words the cloud, when you reverse that, it says die all. Just a couple more because I want to get on to some better material. But Patrick McGoohan, star of the TV series The Prisoner, was being interviewed, and he was talking about who number one was in the show. And he says, the monkey mask, and number one's a monkey, and then number one's himself. You play that backwards, it says, false me, snow a man that makes numbers, now in monad, Sam make number. And then there's somebody in the audience was asking a question, and they said, what interested me was the style. And when you play that backward, it says, the opposite, so Wayne Bush should know. And it's very clear. I mean, I've had a couple people that said they hear it too. And this interview was like in the 60s or 70s. So it really kind of shook me when I heard my name in some of these reversals. And later, Patrick's talking about the greatest enemy one has is himself. He says, greatest enemy that we have make number one was. And backwards, that says, it's a nowhere man game. The hell with him in it, sit out. So to me, that sounds like he's saying the game leads nowhere. And the hell is the game with us in it. And we're playing the demiurge's game. So we should sit out. And that is not play the game and refuse to reincarnate. So I'm just going to go on and I'm going to skip through the rest of these reversals because I don't want to run the show too much longer than 2 hours. And
sounds subconscious, Wayne, like that when you're talking about that reverse speech. Sounds like it's coming from the deep subconscious.
It really is. It's coming from the unconscious or I think whoever's driving the bus. I mean, if your spirit's in control of your body, then it'll be the one that'll probably be given the reversals. If there's entities that are possessing you, then possibly they're the ones that are speaking. It's really hard to say, but it is coming from the unconscious mind for sure.
It's like dreaming, isn't it? You know, you go to sleep and dream every night.
There's a lot of dream. There's a lot of metaphors and symbolism in it, just like in dreams.
In dreams as well, yeah.
Right.
Clues and hints and things and signs and all sorts of things, you know, going on. But this is whole other. The speech thing is weird because people are thinking that they're saying what they mean, but what they really mean is coming out in another way.
You know? Yeah, and when you hear the leading near-death experience speaker talking in forwards, and he's talking about, you know, how we go back down to earth and we reincarnate with our soulmates, and it's all about learning to love. And then in reverse, he's talking about how the archons scan you and all that. That's pretty amazing. But anyway, so the next item I want to talk about real quickly was electronic voice phenomenon, these EVPs, where people leave out tape recorders overnight and then they can hear entities or spirits, I guess, leaving messages on the tape. So there was this poster named JerseyGuy77 on this forum, and he said, just thought I'd share a little of my story. Hopefully, maybe it'll help someone avoid the same fate. He said, I've had on-off interest in the paranormal for many years, but last winter I decided to go active for the first time. I started experimenting with EVP. I didn't capture anything in my first few attempts and was about to give up, but for some reason I kept trying. After about 2 weeks and no results, I captured several EVPs on a single recording. They were intelligent responses too. This captured my curiosity, so I kept recording. Actually, it got to the point where it was becoming an everyday thing, but I started to notice voices on practically every recording I did. They were very faint at first, and I had to listen to the recordings over and over a few times to make out much of what was being said. He said, though I'd occasionally get louder ones with a precursor popping sound. As the days went by, the faint voices started to come into focus, so to speak, where I could hear them much better. I became so good at this that I started to develop a dialogue with these spirits. I would get names, when and where they lived, etc. And to my surprise, many of these spirits claimed to be the spirits of people that I'd either known or knew of. Eventually, I came to believe I was speaking to the spirits of some friends and family members who had passed away. I fell for it all hook, line, and sinker. Everything seemed fine, pleasant, benevolent for about a month and a half. Then I started to get some not-so-pleasant voices showing up in my recordings. Threats, insults, profanity, etc. It started off slight, but seemed to get worse by the day until it got so bad that it practically came to dominate my recordings. But the benevolent voices were still there as well, so I kept at it. Then one day, while I was at my work, near a running fan, all of a sudden, very loud and clear, I started to hear these same menacing voices harassing me from over the fan noise. I was hearing this just with my ears now. I was freaked out to say the least, so I stopped doing EVP right then and there, but it was too late already. In the weeks that followed, I increasingly had more incidents of hearing these menacing voices. It was often, though not always, over some type of background noise or carrier sound. And they say, I believe the spirits use the steady source of sound to enhance a voice, same concept as using white noise when recording. Another thing started to happen. I started to feel physical sensations as I lay in bed at night trying to sleep. It was usually a weird vibrating sensation or the feeling of a finger literally coming up off the mattress and poking me in the lower back. Getting to sleep started to become a problem. Things escalated like this for a while, then literally over the course of a single morning early last April, things just exploded to an extreme level. The voices were everywhere, nonstop, 24/7, day and night. They were much more intense now, too. Some had this weird bass tone effect where when they spoke, I could literally feel the ground shaking. The physical attacks also became much more intense. Sometimes I would feel intense stinging or biting sensations, to put it mildly. I became a complete vegetable for many weeks. It became hard to function at my job, anything. I called out of work a lot and just lay in bed staring at the ceiling, listening to this onslaught of tormenting voices all day and night. And the voices would constantly play mind games. They would claim to be demons and Satan one day, pissed off human spirits another day. One of them claimed to be Jesus. They kept switching the storyline. They would constantly harass me about my sins and literally try and psychologically break me down. It was a nightmare I find hard to put into words. A few months later, I posted my story on a paranormal forum like this, and someone reached out to me through PM that also went through it himself. He gave me a ton of insight into what this was and what was happening to me. He helped me to get back to a somewhat state of normalcy. Then I found others still and received a lot of help for them. I have so much more to tell, but this post is already long enough. I'll come back to it. But I found some common traits in all the accounts I found of this. I'd say it definitely has to do with some type of sensitivity that certain people have to spirits or spiritual influence. In all our accounts, we all pretty much got hit with this fairly quickly after being involved with spirit communication, usually a matter of weeks or months. And we all started making a lot of contact. That is, we're able to start getting a lot of EVPs fairly quickly as well. So for anyone just getting started with EVP first, don't do it, I'd say. But if you do, if you start getting captures quickly and almost too easily, that's not a good sign. You're at greater risk of getting this spirit attachment, obsession, nightmare situation. And once you get it, it's not easy to get rid of. I still haven't, but that's a whole other story in itself, end quote. Then he shows other accounts he found of others encountering the same problem. And then there's posters replying about how after a few weeks they started getting EVP messages and hearing voices nonstop. So it's like a pretty big problem for people, and I just want to warn people not to get involved with EVPs. There's this other person, researcher Peggy Kane, and she was doing all kinds of EVPs. She had like 10 recorders, and she said it took her like a month before she even heard any messages, but eventually she said her place became like Grand Central Station with entities everywhere. But she was also doing reverse speech, and her findings are very similar, and she was saying there's a reptilian race that's raping us and feeding off of us and everything. But I think she concluded the entire thing of leaving messages on a recorder. These entities were lying to her, and she shut down her channel and all this stuff. But the next thing I wanted to cover, an article, is this: remote viewers confirm the Matrix. And remote viewing is a protocol that they use to gain intelligence on remote targets. It mainly was used by the military. It consists of a scientific technical method. And there's a new remote viewer on the scene named Brett Stewart. And his team of four remote viewers remote viewed what he calls Moksha, which is the freedom or liberation from the cycle of death and rebirth. And so he uses what he calls technical intuition. And he says there's a database or matrix that informs reality. So he says his four remote viewers were looking at the target of spiritual liberation, and they were doing it blind. And so they're just talking about the description of the site, what they found. He said, it's a fence or a grid around a place. This acts as a barrier. It collects and traps people, things, or objects. This is actually an innocent planet used in an unintended way, and this meters the flow and access, a checkpoint and an access point for an external force. It's a crowded planet, deliberate function that acts as a cage. People have been dispersed here, and a form of perverted injustice is occurring, like hocus pocus, like magic. There's a planet that acts as an animal pen, refugee camp chucked away out of sight. There's a magnetic force that stirs and agitates, acts in a cylindrical manner, a planetary system that's extremely crowded and jammed. Ghostly voices are flooding into this place, and it's incredibly harrowing for them. A net that's been spun, an operation of catch and release on a grand scale. A massive grid that exists around this planet and acts as a checkpoint, waypoint, or rest stop where souls are drained. Earth is shielded by a companion object. Maybe it exists in a phase state or different dimension. Where this companion object that creates this net is, they're not sure. It's a companion object to Earth. Something powerful and magnetic. It squeezes tightly around the globe. A magnetic vise that is attached around a large place. is a mechanical process that incorporates destructive chemicals. An individual undergoes bombardment as they pass through this system. People feel lost, don't understand what's going on. There's a losing of memories. And these are souls that are being bent back towards the planet, like gravitational lensing, where if your soul is light, instead of shooting off after you die, there's an artificial structure that is lensing or curving your light back down to Earth again. It's powering a massive rotating object that appears like an axle in space, fluctuating and absorbing energy created by the lensing effect. It generates energy inside of this large structure. There's chemicals involved, something being bombarded. It's a destructive process, a fracturing that occurs to force this light of the soul to come back to the planet again for a second, third, infinite amount of times. The mind and body of a person is splayed and fractured. Something's being extracted and taken from them like bees in a box or a harvest of honey from bees. A third part extracts honey out of the bee box and puts the bees back into the box. And so there's harvesting. A harvest occurs when a soul goes up and refracted back down. It's toxic. A number of souls that are reincarnating on this wheel creates an instability requiring the chemical process. The confusion and anger feeds into this process. The mind or intelligence of the soul is being fed on by an external parasitic force. The planet was viewed with extreme envy by an external source, and what occurred as a massive war, massive explosions, fate of a planet was decided. It came to a conclusion, an arms resolution was reached. There's a truce by both sides. However, those that wanted to protect the planet to prevent the group that looked at this place with envy lost. They're unable to prevent. Something was given up, which was Earth. A treaty was signed, an agreement, and a conquest by an external third party. And so he talks about how to achieve moksha, or the liberation. He says, upon death, the particles like cosmic dust becomes charged and creates an emission like a bullet out of a gun. It occurs from the center of the being, spiraling right out of the top of the head from the internal system. It's a massive amount of energy is being expulsed, which is what the soul is. It's sent to a place like a tangled mess. There's a super highway for the soul, mechanical object around Earth preventing a soul from reaching the super highway. The position and angle from which you leave the body is very important. And he talks about how the 45-degree angle for Egyptians was important. And he says, a blissful moment, but an unseen actor unfolds a safety rope here. There's a safety rope. If you exit at the right angle, there's a group waiting there to help you out. If you can meet them at a certain point, they can help you out the rest of the way. There's a great deal of fear associated with this, prevents most people from ever getting out and get trapped up into the system or device. He says there will be more work, and another YouTube video will discuss it. The most significant remote viewing target, we'll talk about this because it's very, very important. He says it has to do with not going into the light when you die. The end of this procedure is like you have a device on your head, and this device goes all the way down into your brain. It created this environment for you to repeat lives over and over. Freedom is like this device has been ripped off your head, like in the Matrix where all the cords are ripped out. And one tiny component in the bigger system, we're part of a funnel. There's a state of moral degradation. The system encircles us, casts a wide net. The advocates of the system are like demons, something parasitic. They have put mind in this cage, and wars of men all fuel the system that keeps us entrapped, intended to create the chaos that feeds into the system that powers it. A part of the soul is chipped off and carried off, and many voices caught in the system, in limbo state. Aspects are chipped off, or ghosts are shells of what they used to be, drained up and used. There's a melancholy and sadness. Soul is bundled up like twigs and used as kindling. The system acts as a kindling, a type of fuel that feeds a different system, part of an engine that feeds back into a power plant. And he uses this analogy that it's like requires oil or grease to pad the railway, needs oil to burn to travel across massive expanses, creating a space or environment for those in charge to pop in and out on the chain. The energy is powering this massive system. Those perpetuating this system is run by a council of organic entities. It exists from a location incredibly concentrated. Gravity and matter exist in a state that freezes time like a bubble or void zone, creating an artificial timeless environment to exist in, to spread out, to make them immortal. Spread throughout these gateways and make pockets in space allows them to pop in and out along the supply line. They live within them. The council created a system for them that has set themselves up as gods. They view themselves as the gods of reality, and that gives them the authority to do what they do. The energy being funneled back is being funneled back to them. The beings are evil, service to self, about their own conquest. Taking the energy that exists in the universe of their own desires through their technology, they created an environment where they are no longer biological. They have eyes that are blazing white. They figured out a way to live forever so they don't die. From that space, they have an outward expansion of conquest in the universe to perpetuate a system of control. A system of cages around planets that keeps souls locked and trapped there so that each time they die, they have to go back, cutting off or fracturing of a soul, that is. Collected in a bundle of twigs that feed the system to power the operation, souls are being used as kindling, as coal for the system. Every time you die, a part of the soul is lost. If you're stuck here for too long, you become so fractured. There are those outside waiting for people who exit the body at the right angle to drop a rope down into the cage to help you the rest of the way out if you do the first part. There's a much larger game being played here. Earth is just one tiny part of it, funneling into a system of cosmic scale in a fight between good and evil. Our pocket of the universe appears to be controlled by the negative side. Its authority exerts power over this pocket in a way that keeps people entrapped here, enslaved here. These ideas of a prison planet seem to fit. Souls become entrapped here, and then they are harvested here again and again, like bees for honey, until the individual figures out how to escape the system. The OBE, being able to determine where you exit from after death, is key. Overcoming fear of exiting is key. And looking for the rope that has dropped down for you seems to be important as well. So that was what he talked about in his remote viewing video of Moksha. So I received an email from a remote viewer, and he wrote and said, in 2000, I found out about remote viewing. My wife and I traveled all over the country for a year and studied with the best of the community who were teaching it, and listened to lectures with most of the academic and military folks who were involved. It was there that I learned more about brainwaves and consciousness extending beyond space and time. I also learned that I was one of those in 2000 who had the brainwaves, which make it easy to have accurate readings of the target. I know most all of these guys in person. A friend who is encouraging me to teach a group of meditators here just sent me this YouTube of Brett Stewart. About halfway through it, his readings jibe with my understandings and experiences. But my reading from a similar target that Dave Morehouse gave us in advanced training concentrated more on what this place is and how it really works. My first impression was a lizard on a throne floating in space as I descended onto the planet, thinking it was a sentinel in the Matrix, something we were told not to engage, kind of like the agents in the movie Matrix. I just whizzed past. I was like tour guided by an unseen guide for the entire afternoon where we lay in a meditative state. I was shown the SIM boards, which were long strands of an algae-looking organism in huge pools, and I'm told they were like the computer chips that kept the whole place in order and operation. I was especially taken with the citizens of the place, and myself for that matter, who could magically create whatever they wanted out of nothing. Mostly was just beings waiting around for the next phase or experience. When it came time for me to write down my summary, I wrote that it was a finishing place for souls or entities. When Dave told us that it was a planet far, far away that they had discovered when they were doing practice targets that dames had tasked them with, my intuition told me that it was Earth on another plane or dimension. All he described about the place was that everybody got lizard beings who seemingly ruled the planet. End quote. I received an email from this Spanish-speaking researcher named Laura Morrow. She wrote me and said, "Hello, Wayne. I've just listened to some of your first interviews on the Higher Side YouTube channel. It was about the sun-moon harvesting system. I have some anecdotes I wanted to share with you and some thoughts. I live in California. My name's Laura Morrow. I've been researching all the same stuff you research, and like you, I was not finding new information that really resonated or made sense to me. After researching lots of information regarding aliens, people that have had contact with them or have been abducted, I started to see the pattern, the archons, the manipulation, everything has the same pattern no matter what you're researching. The patterns with aliens, religion, etc. is the same. The thing they love to say the most is that they're going to save us and we need to go to the light, etc. Well, somehow I started doing some regression hypnosis, except I don't call them that. I basically talk to the subconscious of the person when they are relaxed and want to remember something or want to heal something in their body if they're sick. Anyways, I've done two of those And those two are very interesting as they've helped my research into all this soul harvesting. I'll start with the one I did to my friend. He's a well-known researcher. He's a field researcher, meaning he goes to the places where there's strange activity going on, like unusual phenomenons happening in someone's house or they are being haunted by some spirits or aliens. He goes and interviews, places cameras everywhere. He wants to film the evidence because there's always physical evidence or sighting of these aliens or entities. Anyways, I started helping him to translate some stuff from English to Spanish. He also needed a hypnotherapist, so I said I was going to learn to do it. So he said I'm not sure, there's a message or something in the email wasn't translated right. And I can start training, doing the hypnosis on him. So I did. The hypnosis thing comes to me naturally. He went under hypnosis with no problems. Under hypnosis, he started telling me what he was experiencing. It's a long story, so I'm going to summarize it to the part where he went to the moon, or this entities took him to the moon where they have a base there. They told him humans and everyone shares the moon. A lot of entities have their base there. Before that, I have to tell you, when he got to the first scene, when he went under hypnosis, he saw his sister that had passed away some years back. Plus, he saw a person that had been in contact with him since childhood. This is important because it shows the mind games they play with us. If you want to know what happened in the whole session, I'm more than happy to share that with you, but let me get to the important stuff first. So they arrived at their moon base, and as soon as they arrived, he saw a lot of soldiers arriving there. There were a lot of people, some soldiers, or mainly soldiers that had just died in World War II. He's a researcher, so without me asking him to ask anyone where they're coming from, he went up to a soldier that was terrified and saying, "They are all killing each other down there on Earth. I don't ever want to go back there again. They're just killing each other." My friend asked him his name, what year he was from, and where they had just come from. The soldier answered all his questions. I have that soldier's name. I don't know if there's a way to verify. Maybe you can help me with that. The soldiers had lost one of his legs, and the people that were telling the new arrivals where to go said they were going to get fixed, repaired from their injuries, and they were also went to some therapy, it sounded like. My friend asked those people where they were sending all those people to, so that's what they told him. So they told my friend they have to keep on going to where they were taking him. They told him to say goodbye to his sister and his mom from that place. He said goodbye to them, and they told him to lay down on a table. There was some guy there. He was the one that was going to do the procedure. Oh, before I forget, when he gets to this place where the procedure is going to be done, he sees a lot of big glass tubes that have this blue liquid, and there are lots of grown human bodies in them. They have a lot of these bodies that look like him, but they're younger than him. He's about 50, and his clones were younger, he said. He asked, "Why do you have them there?" He's told that so if he gets injured or died, they use one of the clones to replace him. By then, I was just so eager to ask so many questions, but my friend was doing a great job since he's a researcher. So he's on the table, he's watching this guy and asking him questions. Had one important question I wanted to ask, so I told him to ask, what are they doing to him? The guy was going to inject something in him. Before that, some other guy came and brought a small blue box. I asked what was in the box. He said it was my friend's soul. The guy gave the other guy, the one that was going to inject my friend, the box, and the other guy left. Then they told my friend he had gone to look for his mom, the one that was going to give birth to him. It took a little bit of time, maybe some minutes, so I started questioning again. I asked if they put the whole soul in his body or just a piece. They said they only put a piece of it. The guy returned and said he found his earth mother he was going to be born. I don't remember what he said, but he was injected with this soul stuff. My friend started to feel really sick. He said he didn't feel good. I told him to just look at the scene from above. He didn't have to experience the feelings. All he had to do was just watch what was being done. So he exited the body and started watching from above or outside his body. Once he got out of his body, he said he felt free. The guy that was doing the procedure was answering all his questions, and he said he could go anywhere he wanted, that they didn't say he couldn't do that. He was just asking, like by telepathy. He asked where they were going to take the blue box, and he said they took it to some sort of warehouse or library. I got the feeling it was like some library full of those blue boxes that must have a close or number on them. I was going to ask where they get the souls from, but they stopped me and said I had to wake him up already, and they cut the connection. But before they cut the connection, I asked them to heal my friend. He was abducted, attacked years ago by some beings, and was left with a hearing problem in one of his ears. They said they were going to fix it, but gradually. I also asked them to fix his back because he was in an accident and his back is all messed up. They said they couldn't help him with that he needed to experience that. They left, and I haven't done another session with them. I wrote everything I remembered right away. It seems these people don't want me to do another one because I'm too nosy and ask too many questions. I haven't really talked to my friend. They keep them busy. The other session I've done is for my stepdaughter. She tries to kill herself by drinking a bunch of sleeping pills. She thinks she had an NDE, but I think she had an OBE. She didn't see the light, but she did see what was happening when she was either unconscious or clinically dead. She doesn't know if she was clinically dead. She's going to get her medical records to see if she was, and also what medication they have her, because it was driving her crazy. So I put her under hypnosis and ask her some questions. Then we get to where she's watching the whole scene from when she's took the pills and she sees herself laying on the floor. She's out of body and is crying and saying it was a mistake and starts calling her mom. Nobody was at the house when she took the pills, only her. So she calls for her mom, and her mom gets home and finds her on the floor unconscious. She sees the whole trip to the hospital, sees and hears the doctors arguing about what they're going to do to save her. She didn't see the light or nothing else, so I asked her the million-dollar question, why did she want to kill herself? She said because she wanted to be free. I said, free from what or who? She said, free from the body, it hurts, and I just want to be free. I said, what makes you think you're not free? She said, nobody can get out of Earth. I told her to go up and try to get out. She went up really high, she said, but she couldn't get out. She said there was like a net. She doesn't know anything about spirituality or anything New Age. When she tried to kill herself, she was only 17. She was only a week away from turning 18. I asked to describe the net to me since I already knew what she was talking about. She said it looks like bright, like energy, but it's like a net and no one can get out. It's not visible and it's so high up. I asked her more questions since I had a pretty good idea who or what I was talking to. I asked the entity why it was there. It said it was scared and just wanted to be free. So I said, so by killing the body, you think you can be free? It didn't know. The entity was just scared. I asked, when did it find the container? That's what these entities call our bodies. It said, for some reason, I want to call it a he, so I'll start calling it him. He said he saw her since she was little. I said, did you enter the body when she was born? He said no, that he had seen her and he liked her. He used to come and go, and he would see her. He never told me when he entered the body. So I told her to go to another memory to see if she could remember when he entered the body. She went to a hall with lots of doors, I guess kind of like the Matrix scene where there's lots of doors in a hallway. So I told her to open a door and go in. She goes in and sees this triangle-looking object, but made out of a bright purplish light. She said it looked like a 3D triangle. That's where this entity came in. I guess that was his spaceship or vehicle. The entity was a purplish pinkish color, and it didn't have a body either. It was like mist, she said. Mist. Since she doesn't know anything about aliens or spirits or ghosts, I don't know what she was seeing, but I guess there's entities that are like a mist. I think I've heard some people saying they only see a mist. Actually, I've seen a mist in my house. I recorded it and recorded the entity that was there. This is the most interesting part of her session. The rest was just for herself. I did another session on her, and on this one, she saw her grandma. We didn't know what she was seeing until she started saying some things, and I realized who she was talking about. Anyway, grandma helped her get rid of a lot of implants she had all over her body. I'll tell you more about that one some other day. It's late right now, and I'm falling asleep. Hope you liked my anecdotes and experiences. I have videos and pictures of some of these entities. If you're interested, I'll send them to you so you can show them. People need to see these entities and prove that these things do exist and they are around us. But if we pay close attention to our surroundings, we can record them. They're everywhere, semi-invisible. But if you're trained to see them, you know what to look for. End quote. And Laura said the Spanish-speaking community is really far along in this area of research as opposed to us. And she brought my attention to this Italian regressionist, hypnotherapist named Calogero Grafasi, and he's posted hundreds of regression sessions on YouTube, and they deal with the Matrix and the entities that are interfering with us. And Calogero has recorded many, many sessions. He was able to contact the departed hypnotherapist Dolores Cannon, who wrote many books on aliens and also one on Life Between Lies. And Dolores Cannon is talking to him, you know, the spirit, and she's saying that at death, an array of light opened for her. She did not expect it, and she met many spirits around her, all flying around her, and also extraterrestrials. She knew there could be real collaboration. Now she's convinced of that. She says, quote, I spoke telepathically when alive in my dreams with beings not human. They gave me news and information, sometimes advice. They used me to spread the info they wanted to divulge. They often don't study us, but they use us. Some tend to want to enter into us. They aspire to live our lives, so they follow us and await the death of the body to capture us and manipulate us. They proposed me to collaborate for a project of extreme importance. And she says she represented in life a bridge, a rainbow, a union between what could be the human limit that nears us, the humans, to the ETs, and vice versa. She was the binding. So Caligero asks, what part of your books would you change? And she says, the descriptive part and motivational that I believed belonged to the ETs. I also understood that they have levels of purity, that they also evolve. And evolving, they mutate the body, its structure and way of thinking. And she sees reptilians now. She says, I could not see them because of my project. Because of my project and my thought, they did not want to enter, and I did not include them. Yes, they exist. They are mid-range, not very clean. They do not work cleanly. And Caligero says, you said you were deceived. She says, yes, and in life, rather just as I left my life, just after dying because I met them there, I found beings presenting themselves to me blatantly without formality, those ETs. They were all kinds. They were a fleet. All were there, from the low evolutional ones to the ones of highest evolution, because I talked about all of them, and they came to convince me to follow them because I had much interest in them. And Caligero asked, did you follow them? She said, no, because I realized that not everything I said corresponded to what I was seeing. I have no confidence in them anymore. She said, they are hybrids. They are devices of the reincarnation of hybrid beings. There are devices that are even in the spiritual life are implanted into the spirits. Extraterrestrial devices. Then those spirits are forced to reincarnate to test the devices. They can refuse in the moment they accept the hybridization. After that, they cannot refuse. They must completely reject it. There is suffering with these implants. The implant, when installed, creates pain. When reincarnating, hybridized and implanted. And Caligero asks, why does the human being agree to be implanted, consciously or unconsciously? And she says, because comes invested with humanitarian feelings, comes as a hero, savior of mankind. And he says, you say they tricked you because they wanted you to spread a message on Earth. And she said, a message through which they passed the information that they could also do us good. And I need to say here that, you know, his sessions are in Spanish, and so there's a translator that's trying to convert them to English, so sometimes the English is not perfect. There's the other session he did was about Paula, and Paula had been suffering from fibromyalgia since 12 years, along with the typical state of fatigue, sleep disorders, and depression. She also has symptoms like phobia, fears, and addiction to prescription painkillers. And during the telepathic hypnotic session, with the help of Johanna, three parasitical entities are discovered in Paula's energetic body. One in particular seems to consider its human host as a house, and feeding off the abundance of energy is not willing to let go. And step by step, the hypnotherapist guides the entity to a deep realization where it discovers its ability to handle the required energy starting from itself. And after that, after all, the subdued human body is nothing but a prison, and finally the entity leaves for good. So the Johanna's speaking, and she says, I see something similar to some superhero like Batman. There's a woman, and it's as if she would shapeshift into a bat. I see a Batman. Now it seems a woman, and now it seems a man, as if she would possess her completely. I see a pregnant woman seemingly worried, and I see her as she is today with this Batman behind her, as if he was there to show her he's the master of her body. And Caligero asks to talk with this being. He says his name is Ower, and claims to come from the infinite. He has the form of an eagle in his dimension. He shapeshifts in order to escape from his bosses. He becomes invisible to the radar of his superiors. Caligero speaks to Ower directly, and Ower says, there are numberless powerful creator gods. It's just a battle for power. They want to have control over him since he wants control over others. Control is part of the existing infinite production. They want to control everything. One can control everything mentally and telepathically. They are like me, eagle-like with wings. They are very aggressive. They live between light and darkness. It depends. Caligero says, if you want, Ower, I can help you escape from them. Do you want my help? He says, no. He says, you cannot. And Cal says, that remains to be seen, but tell me at least whether you'd like to get help. Tell me something. Are you with the company inside Paula? He says, yes. How many of you are there? Three. Tell them to get out of Paula's body and to stand in front of you. And it says, it's our house. No, that's not your house. It's your prison. Haven't you got that yet? He says, our house, not our prison, our house. He says, they are controlling you. And their entity says, all those with a soul are like a house for us, a temple. He said, they told you this. They told you this in order to trap you, and you believe in them. The entity says, why should I believe that you're instead telling the truth? He says, Paula's body is not a house, rather a jail. They are keeping you in jail. Wake up, Ower. It's a prison. Why a prison? It's a physical body with no value. Why do you mean no value? Without the life, without the energy, we are nothing. Cal says, I'll show you where the energy is. And he says, the entity says, the energy is generated by the creative spirit. The creative spirit is generated by the human DNA. Cal says, yes, that's true, but it's also inside your DNA. Don't you know that? You own something and you're looking for it outside yourself. Didn't you know that? They laid a trap for you. And the entity says, okay, show me. Cal says, first of all, tell me, what's the DNA molecule like? How do you see it? He says, it's like a braid made of two strings instead of three and two helixes. It's metallic with a light within, a silverish light. Cal says, do you know what this silverish light is? He says, consciousness. Cal says, through this genetic code, catch some energy from the infinite that is surrounding you, then manipulate it through your DNA and transform it into whatever you like based on the frequency. But you don't know all this and you don't know how to use it. Therefore, I invite you to grab the energy surrounding you and not from others, not from other bodies, neither human nor non-human, rather than from around you, from the infinite. Grab this energy and transform it. Let it go through your DNA. Turn it into energy, into whatever you like. For instance, what would you like to transform it into? And the entity says, I can't understand. Cal says, you can't understand because they have erased your memories, so you wouldn't know a thing. You learn by doing, and you do it by willing it. The entity says, I want to be like a star of light. Cal says, grab the energy from the universe and transform it into light within you. Do it. He says, how do I grab it? He says, through your willpower. It's enough to will it. You already know how to do it. Do it. And then you turn it into light. Modify its frequency, and you'll see how this energy shifts until it reaches the light frequency of your choice. Do it and tell me what happens. Eeyore, tell me what happens. Eeyore says, I'm doing it. I'm feeling the light. Cal says, are you feeling it? Do you like it? He says, yes, very much. Cal says, you'll have to pay attention, though. For this light, they are going to want to steal it from you. Those beings are unable to produce it. Always look for it within others, anywhere they see it. Tell me how you feel now. He says, full. You feel good? Yes. Would you rather remain like that or inside a human body? He says, it's more or less the same thing. Cal says, to you, it feels similar only because you have just begun, but you can raise the energetic level even higher. How do you feel now? He says, good. He says, now, Ower, let's do something. Let's go together. Let's go find the entity that sent you to Paula's body. And there's more to that session, but that's the main gist of it. And another client that he was regressing, named Max, looked into the veil of the matrix. And I have a summary up on YouTube, and it says, in the course of the session of regressive hypnosis, Max learns that the moon is a satellite that was moved by the draconians from the orbit of Saturn to the orbit of the Earth. Inside the moon, on its dark side, there exists a reptilian base from where humankind is being controlled. Max also detects a human presence in the lunar base. There are 14 living species in the entire universe that are being controlled by these reptilians. They are used for the purpose of energy harvesting, and they are heavily monitored. Among these species, we also find the hominids, us, the human beings. And in the session, Max, he sees these gray beings in his room who are being controlled by a lizard. They are exerting mind control over him through a bug that was inserted in or near his pineal gland. He thinks maybe at birth in the hospital. There's a passage or portal in the upper corner of the room, and the chip is monitored by a control panel in a spaceship inside an underground reptilian base hidden like a huge nest inside craters on the backside of the moon. There are four entrances covered by doors that open from the middle. He sees a human in a highly ranked military uniform. The base takes up 40% of the interior and was built nearly a million years ago, artificially teleported here from the orbit of Saturn, which has a generator within it. There's five places in Jupiter's orbit that helps to control Earth. He sees that lizards built the base and that these machines are controlled with the mind. The commander of the base resides very far away in Draco or Draconia by a very large dragon with scales, wings, and a huge tail sitting on a throne with the wings folded behind it. It's got yellow eyes with a red rim and a slit in its eye for a pupil. The dragon is named Al-Kurlu. There's no vowels in it. It's pretty hard to pronounce. He's observing and controlling Earth and also has 14 other similar bases in the orbit of Jupiter that control other planets and inhabitants. The dragon controls 14 different civilizations. He uses them for investigation and energy supply, energetic nourishment. He says they draw our energy because they are forced to do it. They cause the individuals to generate a certain kind of energy that they can't produce themselves, certain feelings they can't produce, hate, anger, rage, violence, cruelty. They feed off those frequencies. They are cold and calculating. They get worried when we have joy and happiness. They don't want that. The species are controlled by implants inserted in their bodies to repress the other energies they don't need. They are on a different plane and need to control their bodies. His implants have limited him and caused the type of feelings they are after: jealousy, insecurity, low self-esteem. He gets fatigued by the energy they are constantly taking from him. By making him tired, it's easier to generate the energies they want. They block him from remembering his dreams because he can get in touch with other beings, which they don't like. He could go to other planes to communicate. He has a bug in the pineal, the ears, the eyes, the legs, the arms, near the heart, testicles, genitals, a plaque in the nape as if it was a cable running through the spinal column. In order to get him implanted during his dreams, they used the image of other people and told him they were there to help him. He trusted them and thought his essence would help other people. We are the masters. They need our permission. He trusted them and thought his essence would help other people. I'm sorry, I already read that. He tells the dragon to remove all the implants, and he asks why, and then he does so. Four grays come with tools. From the nape to the spine, they have to pay attention. There are many wires. Another regression session he did was with Gwen, and it was an investigation into the reincarnation cycle. And there's this light being named Samuel who wants to show her what's beyond. He takes her near a waterfall, and she says, "I see some light, a tunnel, a river, a boat, a garden." They get to a waterfall with a tunnel behind it. She says the feelings she gets are not that positive. She won't take his hand, but she follows him. She goes with him through the tunnel where there's a dark place. So she goes back through the tunnel to where she was. Now the being looks like a man with human features, white long hair and beard, old. She says his role is to teach, to lead the way between the garden and the other life, to lead during the transition inside the tunnel. She says there are all the souls who didn't want to go toward the light. They are not good. Souls in standby that don't want the light, and that's why it's dark there. The garden is the place we get to when we finish our vital path and we get into the extraterrestrial dimension, the place where we are welcomed after death, he says. Caligero tells her to take the first few steps in the process of reincarnation and see what happens. She sees a gate like an entrance to a town with many structures, as if she has to make a reincarnation request, as if the application form had to be placed in the structure. She says many families decide to do it together as a life project, like written down on a piece of paper and handed to the larger entities. One of the entities tells her the project is almost always accepted, but that we build our own fate, because when you get back there, you'll have to judge whether your project was wrong or right. She says it's a painful process because in the other dimension, we are aware it will be hard, and we know we are being tested, and it's painful because we lose energy, and that's painful to the body and the spirit. She says there is always a different person who wants to take her for a ride to go with them because they deal with reincarnation, but that always becomes something dark. Caligero says, quote, "When we normally go into a session of regressive hypnosis, a session about the reincarnational cycle, we often see this welcoming old man, a being made of light, a person somehow giving a sense of security, positivity, whatever, that we have to follow at a certain moment. But then upon following him, we get to a place that is not the place. It's a different place where everything is ruled by fear, by pain and suffering. And that's when we end up reincarnating on the earth. And that's why I strongly believe the reincarnational cycle is something we must break. We must break it to definitely be set free from this cage. I guess we instinctively break it when, anyway, during this reincarnational game, whether we like it or not, we acquire an awareness. They use us for their goals. During the reincarnational cycle, they use us to steal our energy. as the entity was telling you about. It's just as if we were farm animals, cattle, so they breed us to feed themselves for fun. For whatever reason, experiments, whatever, what we human beings do with animals. We are in a reincarnational cycle, which we believe we have to go through in order to evolve. Actually, there's a truth in all this. I mean, as a matter of fact, it is an experience which allows us to evolve. Still, the main aim is not a revolution. That's only a collateral effect. The main aim is the use by a third entity who can manipulate this because they are in a higher dimension. Therefore, they can manipulate us. So as long as we believe we need to reincarnate in order to evolve, also because we don't need to learn anything, because as long as we are separated from a universal general awareness, consciousness, whatever you want to call it, as long as we are separated, therefore isolated into this body, into this mind, or into other bodies somewhere else, we are not aware. We need to get information from the part we were cut off from. When a person is under hypnosis and manages to get in touch with this general universal awareness, even though the information is limited, contaminated, and altered, that person in that very moment will enjoy things she never thought she would get to know during her daily life. I very often hypnotize people who know absolutely nothing about a certain topic, and they start talking to me about that subject with the university professor's knowledge. They tell me things they don't even know where they come from. Then they think they might have invented them, but if you go and check about the subject, they really make sense. So we don't need to learn. We actually need no reincarnational cycle in order to learn. All we need to do is get rid of all this. We are all connected to a general awareness. We know it all. We are all together one single thing. So the fact we are all isolated in these bodies, that they do not allow us to get in touch with the universal general conscience that we are made of, the awareness itself we belong to and through a structure of beliefs, they make us believe we need to acquire knowledge, whereas we only need to reach out for it. We need to learn through suffering. We need to learn through the reincarnational cycle, through injustice, sacrifices, pain. No, I don't see the reason for this. All this only generates low vibrational energy. All this prevents us from knowing about the whole situation, end quote. Then later in the session, she recalls a life before Christ, and he tells her to go to the moment of her death. She says she gets to a place with clouds above and beneath. A light materializes into a person dressed in white, telling her, "Good, you did a great job." He tells her now to go. And a bright portal opens up. She reunites with a lot of people, asking her how it went. She's in a sort of room and wonders, "What shall I do now? What is my next job?" She wants to go back down because that's her job now. Calogero asks her, "Doesn't she want to explore other worlds before going back down to Earth?" But she says, "No, she likes the Earth, and they need her." She says she is arguing with the guy. Calogero proposes they tell the guy she doesn't want to go back to Earth anymore. The being says she can rest. Calogero tells her to go to the place where souls are getting ready to reincarnate. So she sees a classroom, a school. The same being is telling them that help is needed down there. But the souls don't seem too aware, so Calogero asks her to go to the place where the reincarnation is being decided. And she goes to a garden, and a figure who looks like Jesus is there. "Welcome, I am the master," he says. She says he claims to be Jesus, but the Jesus figure is frowning at her as if, "Mind your own business." The soul is kneeling as if it really is Jesus and thanking this Jesus for dragging him out of some muddy place. He holds his hand and takes him to a city with walls around it. She sees an angel flying around. Calogero asks how high its vibration is, and she says he's not bright, but that she is. She says he is vibrating at 836, and she is vibrating at 10,000 or more. She says the being that was lifted from the mud was vibrating at 160, and he's in real ecstasy. She says this place really looks like paradise there, just as we know it. She says there are mountains, creeks, flowers, grass, and little angels flying around, butterflies. She sees it extremely fake, though, like theater stages for children with a fabric background. Calogero asks what's behind the fabric background. She says, "Nothing. She sees like a hologram. It's like a cinema screen." He asks what's behind the movie screen. She sees a glass ball and nothing behind it. It's like seeing a glass wall with nothing behind it. The Jesus figure tells the poor guy, "You've been very naughty. That's why you are there. You've got to go down and try to do things better." He was a traitor, a cheater, he stole, he abused a dog. So Jesus tells him he needs to go back to the earth. She says he claims to be Jesus, but he's rather gross. He takes the shape of who comes along of his expectation. He reads into the person and automatically gives the answer they're looking for. Jesus says we are all here to learn. He He says, but Jesus never said to reincarnate, and Jesus says you have to be very smart in order not to reincarnate anymore. Jesus tells him, you were not good, so I'm leading you to perfection. Try not to make any mistakes. It won't be easy. We need to delete your memories so you become pure again. I'll delete your faults, like he's giving him another chance. Calogero tells her to tell the guy to ask Jesus why he should delete his memories. How will he improve if he can't remember? He answers he needs to evaluate the soul, not the human being. It would be too easy otherwise. Calogero wants him to ask the difference between the being and the soul. Calogero asks her to ask the guy if Jesus' answers are convincing, and he says, yes, because it's Jesus. She sees them passing through a filter, and they pass out. They are taken down, like dematerializing. If you want to reincarnate, you have to go through this filter. She asks the man if he wants to reincarnate, and he says yes, because he wants to improve. Calogero tells her to tell the guy he could choose not to reincarnate anymore. He won't go to Earth. He will go somewhere else. He says there are more beautiful places to go to and to tell Jesus he doesn't want to reincarnate. The guy is afraid Jesus will get mad at him, and Calogero asks if that sounds like the nature of Jesus. Jesus tells him it's a demon. Jesus gives up and says, you can take this one, and there's others for his business. So the guy now doesn't know where to go. Now next to him, there's a wall made of rubber that he's touching. He's waking up but is upset because she talked him into leaving that beautiful place. She sees spheres and the sphere called Planet Earth below. She sees something going back and forth, souls coming from the Earth. Calogero asks who's running the system. She doesn't know. He asks her to tell the guy to look at Jesus again and see his real features, those he really uses in his dimension. She says she sees him as a reptilian. He says he sees him as a green energy. She sees a reincarnation spirit linked to the Pleiades. She sees a planet with a ball on top and always these souls going back and forth. She sees a passage from the Earth to the Pleiades, but not from the Pleiades sphere to Earth. Then she says a Pleiadian being came to warn and that there were three reptilian beings and maybe a Manus near her because she is an open channel. She said she built a dome around her and rejected them. She says there is a reincarnation movement from the Pleiades to the Earth. There's one filter at the Pleiades, though, because it would be too much like going from rags to riches. Some are coming here to awaken. And another movement from a system called K2T or Sirium. She sees the Earth with glass globes around it, each one containing a planet. Calogero says to check on the guy. He doesn't know where to go now. He says to take him to the Pleiades. She can go there like whoosh, but he can't. He's too heavy. So they take him back to where the fake Jesus guy was, and the fake Jesus guy says, see, he was of no use to you. So the guy's upset because they showed him it was all fake, and now he has reincarnate into it. They explain it's a process of awakening. So Calogero tells her to start coming back to her body. She says the spirit is there telling him that what he said about they sent us on Earth with deception so they can feed on our energy. But anyway, there's an awakening, a collateral effect, but as long as it lasts, they do it. In order for us to reach this awareness, we need to live lives on the Earth. It's a giving and taking. Those from the Interstellar Committee. That's why they let us play this kind of game, because more and more people are waking up lately. There's another session with, I think, a guy named Angelo. He was abducted by little gray aliens with four fingers, taken to a white room in a spaceship with a table with a sphere in the middle as if it were a computer. The alien touches it, and the sphere turns from white to a shining blue. It's meant as a record of information. It's like a warehouse. They are emotions from people. He takes the sadness and the anger or rage, but leaves some of the energy behind for him to give himself some more so that he may produce more for him. The energies in the sphere have been taken from six people to be used as fuel and to give them more strength and make them more lively as if it were food, which they absorb through their arms. Calogero tells him to call their boss, the commander of the ship. He's a taller being with the same form, dressed with a red and dark blue mantle like a brooch. This being doesn't answer, so Calogero tells him to call his boss, the one responsible for the project of the spear harvesting human energy. He's an ugly, enraged being named Everon, with a cream-colored skin, a bit reptilian, a lizard but also similar to human like a hybrid. With the spear, they can move from place to place monitoring ships, and they feed through it. They carry it to a warehouse center. He's been abducted over 50 times and had his energy taken. The energy theft has caused him problems with fatigue, much sadness, depression, stress, fear, and anger or rage. Angelo starts vomiting. His suicidal tendencies are due to them generating sadness and negative thoughts in his mind. Someone who's on a ship induces arguments with him. To do this, they put a square metallic card on the top of his head on his skull that's connected to one on his forehead, which looks like a flea. Another flea-like device on the nape of his neck and something in the stomach. Calogero tells him to tell the entity to remove all the implants from his body now and for good. The entity gets really angry because from their point of view, they'll have less resources available. But he must obey the order because he's interfering with his energetic sphere, and everything can change only due to your willpower, whether he wants it or not. They use tools like a very pointed small drill with tweezers to remove the implants little by little. For the one on the side, he inserts a device like a needle to extract the implant. Calogero explains, the will was manipulated in a certain way so that you may want what in reality only they want and not what you yourself really want. That is through deception or through a mental reservation, so to speak. It's a technique to use one's free will and willpower. Another technique consists in eliminating the situation by changing the frequency. That is by changing dimension or density. By way of your human capacities, you have the faculty to vibrate at a higher frequency compared to them. Therefore, you can escape their frequency field where there's tuning so that implant from them might be connected to you. Both techniques are valid. Now I raise your frequency so that you may shift your dimension fully and you won't see anything anymore of this situation, of these spaceships, of these beings. We change dimension. We exit their frequency range. End quote. Now Calogero says, now we raise this frequency so they won't see you anymore, so that you may exit that place so that you become incompatible frequency-wise. It's like changing a radio station. You change by shifting from one frequency to another. You very simply change the frequency. That's what we were about to do. End quote. And then there's this session he did with Alexei. And Calogero speaks with Alexei through a friend named Johanna. And there are entities in his bedroom at night, tall, dark, thin, with big black eyes. They're studying his brain through a light similar to a laser. Calogero tells them to contact their boss. A dragon named Axial from Virtus in the sixth dimension appears, sticking his tongue out. He tells them not to meddle because the child is his, that he owns his soul. There's a race of these beings that come here to experiment on the children who look different because modern science doesn't understand the genetic evolution of these children. They are controlling his brain to try and grab his genetic evolution because he is a child of the new era. The dragon is searching for pieces of Alexei. They also steal his spiritual energy. They look for the energetic leap. It's about a new beginning since we have a part of DNA activated which you don't. It's something that nobody decided. It's as if the cells had an intelligence of their own. The cellular intelligence wakes up and gets activated. The cell can decide on its own. He's on a light blue planet in the Milky Way named Atie, where there are only children similar to humans but with transparent bodies. There are some elders there, but we are the light children. The elders ask, who wants to go to Earth? An 80-year-old elder named Alu, with long white hair and a sparse beard, wearing a white tunic, asks him whether he can go to Earth. He says Earth needs help because we need to elevate ourselves, so he asks if he'd like to help them become elevated. Alexei answers yes, he'd like to help. Calogero asks, does he know how Earth gets elevated? Alexei answers, I'm one of those children, and when there's a necessity for us to come down on Earth willingly, we have a genetic evolution at our disposal, which at some point is going to genetically awaken certain people, and therefore there will exist a new communication means among us. From that moment on, I'll understand what I have to do without any instruction. The only danger in this dimension is amnesia. Therefore, the only risk is that we may have to go back without having accomplished our mission. The amnesia is an issue of vibrations we're not familiar with. Children that are different from the others suffer because on Earth they are treated as if they are crazy. If we could remember, we really could become crazy in a society which doesn't understand us. Therefore, we don't remember in order not to suffer within this system. The elder shows him these things from his point of view. Calogero wants him to show the elder things from another point of view, and Calogero proposes they play a game and not reincarnate. Alexei says after a while they wish to go, that from their position they can observe the planet and feel there's much suffering. Eventually they choose to go because they want to do something. They are bored there. Calogero asks him to go to where he was before he decided to go to the blue planet. Alexei answers, I am in the universe. Caligera asks him to go back before that, and he says, I am part of the universe. Caligera finds out it's his first time on Earth. Before that, Alexei says, where the all is, and the all, it's the immensity, the all. It's so immense that the all becomes the nothing, because the all is what we see, but our eyes cannot see beyond what the eyes can see. There's much more. And I was right there when where the eye cannot see. He left because he wanted to do something else, to learn something different. I just went by myself. I thought of it, and it happened. I thought that I wanted to do something different, and I found myself there. If you think of a nice place may appear to you, but you don't necessarily have to pick a place. Rather, only something connected to the beauty of the thought you had. Caligero tells him to go back to the blue planet. He says they communicate through brain waves. We don't talk. Each wave has emotion, and according to it, I connect with someone else's brain waves. Caligero tells him to search and find a child who remembers where he was before coming to the blue planet. He finds one called Evie. He says to accompany him to the place she was just before coming to the blue planet. She says she is in the all. I am a part of the universal intelligence. Caligero asks where she was before that. She answers, inside the universal intelligence, there are universal molecules possessed of an intelligence, and they decide what needs to be done. They decide whether we need to exist or not, whether we need to go to Earth or not, to what planet. We can also choose to become stars. Caligero wants to know what happens at the moment she decided to go to the blue planet. She says, silence. Then expansion and universal movement. Each time this movement gets activated, something shifts. Each time this movement becomes larger, then it stops and we change. We create. Caligero talks with Alexei again. He tells him to face the being who sent him to Earth and to ask him if he would be connected to him on Earth. He answers that the connection must die, but the connection can be made later on in the DNA. The connection is made in a park when he's 24. He sees moving lights in the sky in what he believes is the year 2023. Some people start seeing ETs, and they don't get frightened because they already know about their existence. It's starting to become normal to see lights in the sky. He has a telepathic connection with someone there. There are large, black, robotic, non-human ETs in a bubble of light. They are in the light. They monitor the Earth's atmospheric pressure system, etc. And Caligero tells him to go to the cause of his autism. He says they try to gain control of my brain, to steal my evolved genetics, to steal it and do things to me. They want things they want, what I have to do. They wait for us to reincarnate in order to steal our genetic evolution. Caligero asks to speak with Alu. Alu says that in the Earth system all sorts of things can happen and that there are always risks. Everyone knows the risks connected to the system, like the fact that things get forgotten here. They already know about the dangers and the hardships they are going to encounter, and they freely decide whether to go or not. They know that before being born, they're going to forget, and they won't be able to defend themselves. Based on what they do, they are going to wake up, because this is how the system is made. Every system and density has its own laws. If we were to know everything here, we couldn't expect to be born there and to know everything, because the laws of this dimension are different. Before they are born, they know all that is going to transpire. I can't interfere with a system where the density differs from mine. I can only warn you before things occur. It's the only defense I propose to them. Tell them all that might help and all that might happen. Once they are there, they are there. Caligero asks who's responsible for erasing all the information. He answers, when the soul passes, there's a filter set there by some reptilian entities and other entities trying to gain control over the system. It's as if Earth is wrapped inside a cloak. A cloak which is breaking apart. It's also a mind monitor. Each person entering the system receives a mind monitor. Some are born, and as they are still children, they can't remember, but everyone is born with this monitor which makes us forget everything. The cloak is breaking apart. Everything's going to change. We cannot interfere. They do things they don't have the right to do. In the whole system, there's an energetic frequency that is going to become revealed, and everything is going to shift. About 20% will awaken. Some of these people who can't wake up are activating other people who are going through the awakening. In this system, people have as a rule that of learning through suffering or loving and having to give oneself to someone in order to learn. Therefore, these children who are unable to awaken, they activate love in these people because they activate feelings that are not easy to activate in this density because they were all stuck in a context of rage or fear. They live in suffering. Therefore, a child who's not awakening, who needs help, If he doesn't become awake, he activates a loving condition on the child who is awakening. And this loving condition, in return, activates other conditions, which in turn help to improve the Earth's frequency. Caligero asks, therefore, the person who doesn't become awake is doomed to suffer? He answers, in fact, he doesn't live in suffering because he has no awareness of the suffering itself. He's happy. The suffering belongs to the one who believes that the spontaneity of this child is like a disease. The child lives his own state as something normal. The problem lies in the other and in how he lives the issue. But even in that case, when he receives this love activated in him, he simultaneously raises the Earth's and his own frequency. The human being is selfish, focused on himself and all that is material. Caligero asked to speak with Alexei again, who heard the answer but wasn't aware of all that. Caligero asks if he had known all that, would he still have come to Earth? He tells him to go to the moment where they are explaining this to him. They are asking him whether he feels capable of making it or not, that by living here he'll be under the impression of having a very long existence, while in fact time is not going to be that long compared to the place we come from. Caligero asks if they tell him that other beings might interfere. He answers, they told me about the reptilians, that they were going to install a monitor. Did they also explain how you can get rid of it? Yes, they say I should do the things I like and to avoid circumstances where I lose control. When I don't like a situation, I just say I'm going somewhere else or that I want to be alone. That way I'll feel better. Caligero asks if the beings are interfering with him, and he answers yes. They put my body inside a tube, a hanging tube, and there are two of us. It's very cold. There's one like myself. We are inside a transparent tube. They possess one other myself. It's a sort of cloning. They stole all my energy. I can't do anything because all my energies, he's eating them up. I knew this might happen. I must do things I like. He's stealing all my energies. He says he should try to help others wake up, but I've also been put inside a trap. I don't know how to get out of this trap, but my parents discovered a method to free me from this situation. Therefore, we are here for that, no? It's the reason I was born as their son. I know I couldn't do it alone, and my parents can do it in my place. Human beings need so much time to understand things. In my place, it takes a very short time to understand things. Caligero says, human beings live in total amnesia. They don't know anything because there's a filter. Therefore, all those who come on Earth are manipulated because they are not aware. They have no information. What happens to those who are not yet on Earth, or those who left Earth and possess certain features, since there are different levels? They tell themselves, see, what's the state of the Earth? She's totally asleep. We need to wake her up. Therefore, you can go there. You have these capabilities. And you answer, yeah, sure, I want to go. And they say, this and that will happen to you. And you reply, don't worry, I want to go. And they say, go then, go on Earth. Therefore, you come in. Alexei answers, I'm thinking that the duration of time here is one day there, and there I wouldn't question my decision for that reason. I complain about the time necessary to understand such simple things. When you are familiar with a different dimension in time, faster, and you find yourself here, you get bored. But in this moment at the planetary level, there's a vibration which is supporting the awakening of more than 20% because the vibration is raising fast. Caligero says it makes no sense going on Earth if you have to become awakened again. From the logical perspective, you shouldn't go at all, neither you nor anyone. Why go? In order to have someone wake you up while this someone may be asleep himself. Alexei says, we come here because the system is controlled by them, therefore everyone is under the risk of being attacked. Caligero says, if no one would come, nobody would have this problem. He says, I want to tell you in other words, you don't need to wake up provided you don't come on Earth at all. Therefore, the only solution is not to come here at all. The trap is effective when you come here. He answers, okay, but if I don't come, how can I help people who become awakened? Cal says, sooner or later people will die and will go. Alexei says, when they go, they are going to be again subjected to the trap. That's why they have to come awakened before their death. In general, people move on lower frequencies. If they die with these vibrations when they leave Earth, they end up in a system made of lower frequencies than higher ones. This system is controlled by them. We are trying to wake people up before they die so that at the moment of death, they have gained a different consciousness. Then they will automatically enter a different vibrational system and won't fall into traps anymore. And Cal says, okay, I can see that you know everything, so I leave you in this situation and say goodbye, okay? Alexei says, then tell me how to avoid the fact that people become deceived when they die if you know more than I do. Cal says, I told you many times already, and your reply is always the same. I told you that the solution is not to go on Earth at all. Alexei says, if a person dies and falls into a trap, how can he not reincarnate since they force him, since his concepts are tied to what he learned here on Earth? Cal said, like they did with you, why are you on Earth in this moment? Alexei says, nobody has forced me to come. I made this decision alone. Cal says, that's not what it looks like. You're under the impression that you made the decision, but that's not the case in my opinion. Alexei says, then explain how a person who died decide not to reincarnate again. How can one do that without knowing these things? Cal says, these things are not known when they are filtered. When they die, they can still be filtered, but the Earth's filter is one of the most powerful. When one dies, the filters dissolve, rather powerful filters. They dissolve, and therefore the soul will have less filters. Alexei says, they got trapped before. Cal says, but most of the souls got trapped before and then sent back on Earth, each one according to his level of consciousness. Few of us can really escape all this. You too were sent back on Earth based on your level of consciousness. Your level of consciousness was the belief that you had come here to help. It's like telling a soldier that in order to quit war, violence, hate, and suffering, he needs to fight. Either go to war or it's the same. It's an endless circle. On Earth, there have been wars since its creation. Each time there's a war, it would seem that war is meant to bring peace. We're in 2015, and Alexei says, if we don't help the people who are still alive, they will die on a lower level of consciousness, and it will never end. Cal says, the problem is that I can't discuss this further. I'm only asking if you want to get free from the reptiles. It's another thing. Alexei says, sure. Yes, sure, I want to. And Cal says, tell the reptiles to remove all of the implants you have. Reptilians, Dracos, Pleiadians, Arcturians, and all the others. Let them remove all the implants. The rest, we are going to see it later. Alexei says, I see a short circuit in my brain. There are lights, like flashes, and I see my brain brightening up like a light bulb. It's as if I'm becoming aware of something. So they were just arguing back and forth over and over about whether it was necessary to come back to Earth. Reminds me of this episode of Rick and Morty, and this is a cartoon, and Rick's the scientist, and he's always experimenting with stuff, but he's like created this other world with beings on it to generate energy to power the battery for his car, and then there's like another time where he's like talking about, he's like, the first law of space travel is if there's a dying planet, if you hear a distress signal from a dying planet, it 90% of the time it means free alien shit. The other 10% of the time, it's a trap. So here's this other regression session he did with Grisel. I don't know how you say that name, Grisel. The entity seems to be the very caricature of the known reptile. He has a very large head, very robust, looks like the head of a dinosaur, but not too long as if it was human, but mixed with between a dragon and a reptile. The entire back is covered with a crest up to the tail. Calogero tells her to have all the entities that are interfering with her to stand in a line in front of her. There's this one, the dragon, and 10 more reptiles similar to little lizards. 3 grays, altogether about 20. There are also beings that we like to call disembodied like us, human spirits. An insectoid resembling a manis. There's one that is hiding, I can't see, the one that causes her tremors. It's a feline, actually 3, a sort of tiger, and I actually like tigers. The dragon is the strongest of all the beings. He won't give his name. Calogero says he must because it's her will. The dragon is saying he is stronger than her, and she can't see why. Calogero says the dragon's lying. She finds out his name is Ralph, R-A-L-F. Her eyes are hurting as if he's rubbing them. Calogero says, do you see what this game's about? It's your will. She says feels like a prisoner. He's teasing her. Calogero speaks to Ralph. He asks what he's doing with her. He says the same as the others, destroying them to get power and strength. The lizards and greys are at his command, but not the manis or felines. The human spirits are his slaves. He uses the spirits to cause fear. He uses the greys for experiments, and the lizards take care of them. He's not at conflict with the manis. They can do all they want with their I don't care. You don't know how we won. In this space, there are beings with only a percentage of their essence in their body. She's an example of that. But true essence is not in her body, rather in a laboratory. Every one of us can watch, experiment, steal this knowledge. Several families of beings brought the essence to the laboratory. They work independently, but when it comes in handy, they work together. He's trying to obtain Grisel's strength from her and her power. Calogero asks to speak with the mantis. Her name is LRX2. She squeezes her eyes and says they are wounding her with their glances. Calogero asks what she's going to do. She says she will take that power from them. You have no right to hurt her, so she does so. Calogero says when one is unaware, they can't use their own will. So now he starts speaking to the mantis. The mantis says she's having fun with Griso by scaring her and feeding upon her from her fears. It also says it plays with her sexuality. They don't need her for reproduction. It's just having fun with the people she's been with, and also when she masturbates and reaches orgasm. Also thoughts of sexual nature. It feeds upon this sexual energy to survive. It prefers sexual energy. Fear is fun, but not very useful. Others need the fear, but not it. It needs sexual energy. It survives and can reproduce with other beings by using this energy. Calogero says, so you do need it to reproduce, and it says yes. We don't have an easy and fast capacity to reproduce and so quickly. We have many problems with reproduction. Our problems began when we began to lose energy that we may call positive. They call it simply energy. Our reproductive organs deteriorated. It is male, but there is a female with him. There are a few females, and their reproductive organs are deteriorated. He didn't impregnate Griesel. He doesn't need her for that, only energy, because she's a prisoner, not a slave. A prisoner. All the slaves must work. We steal their ovum. We use them as incubators, but she's only a prisoner. They take advantage of her. The difference between slave and prisoner is tied to their energetic capacity, to their knowledge and qualities. She's a prisoner, but we don't take care of her. She keeps herself fit with her own strengths and capacities. She can't become weak. That's why she's in that body. The level of her power is only slightly diminished. There's a percentage of her power in this body, and the rest is kept in a capsule. The felines put it there. They only allowed me to use her for sexual energy. There's nothing to pay to use it. He takes its rightful part. You haven't the slightest idea what's going to befall you with all you are accumulating. Calogero tells Griesel to disconnect from the mantis. He asks to speak to the leader of the felinoids, the felines. His name is Kay. She's seen him before in her dreams as a normal tiger, but his body is robust, very tall, reaching up to 5 meters. He's a biped. Calogero asks Kay what he's doing to Griesel. Kay says what one does to prisoners. He asks if she is your prisoner, why do you leave her with the insectoids and dragons? Because in that way they'll have at their disposal all the information they need to survive. In return, he asks for space, lands, territories, and several galaxies, like you say, dimensions. He says they know the price. Calogero says the mantis didn't know. Kay says information depends on knowledge. The dragon knows, but the mantis didn't. They are just beasts. They couldn't understand. Calogero asks what he wants from Griesel. To keep her captive. I don't want her to do her job, which is for her to help people. That's not convenient for him. He doesn't want them to understand and to lose his power over them. If more people became aware, he would lose his power. The knowledge of humans could cause him to lose his power. It's not auspicable for that. They become aware of their own capacities and use them. That's why we keep them in that condition. He doesn't use her to feed him. He has other places to feed himself. He feeds from the energies from the prisoners in these jails, some other species of light beings. They trap them. They are innocent. They don't know darkness. They are tricked through their desires. For them, I'm a being in darkness, but I can appear however I like. They produce the light from the cells, and he takes it. He once used to produce this type of energy, but he got disconnected from the source. It's too boring to reconnect. Here I have power. There I don't. There are no humans among those beings of light. We force upon them a human body and force them to reincarnate to get what we need. Power, energy, nourishment, this space, this place where we keep our slaves, so those who are disconnected are able to survive. He tells the feline to disconnect. He tells Griesel to go to the moment when they steal her essence and put her in a laboratory. She says they trapped her, the felines. They told her they were going to prepare me for my objective. I am the space at a time when there's nothing. All is calm, but I felt I received some information that we need. We are very many to do something for this place where we saw the chaos. We couldn't understand the chaos, for we didn't know what it was, but it drew our attention, and so we went to a place where the felines were. They told me I should get prepared to face this chaos. They told me they would help me stop the chaos. They prepared me. I didn't know what war was. I knew nothing of this. I didn't know duality or darkness. They taught me everything so I could be able to fight. When my training was over, it was as if I was getting ready for a war, because they also gave me weapons of the same kind there or here. Then they locked me in a kind of room like a coffin, but not exactly a coffin with much technology, a technology we still ignore. Her physical body hadn't been created yet. Calogero wants to speak with the feline K again. He asks why he takes on the form of a feline. He says because he likes it. Before coming here, there's a space where those that you know as animals are actually beings. The feline is the strongest. Carol Jarrow asks why some choose to take the form of a lizard. When there was the disconnection, we didn't understand why they took that form. There are several forms. I chose the felinoid because I was the strongest. The other forms are given through disconnection. Each time a light being comes here to know things, to experiment, acquire knowledge, we play with them. We pick them according to race, as you call it, and we send them to make experiments with the ants we have here. For example, the insectoid or the mantis, they chose these beings according to their level of knowledge, and they are sent to these places, so we put them in these bodies. They resemble animals, not humans. They have capacities but no power to decide. They have a form of intelligence with non-capacity to produce, to create, because we only want them to adopt our own behavior. One has creativity, the other talent. Others are yet simply inside a body and live in it, nothing more, even though they have a brain. Griesel's essence is kept captive in a place where nobody can go. You cannot go there. Caligero says, we'll go there now, and disconnects from the feline. He tells Griesel to go to the place where your essence is kept captive. She says it hurts. They torture her when she's there. It's sort of a laboratory in a galaxy far away. It's as if in outer space in a spaceship. When I'm in that place, it's as if it's a different dimension. She sees herself like a light being there. She's inside the container. She's reminded of the one she saw in the movie Avatar. A cylinder? Yes, there are many more, and they are all filled with light beings, humans and other types. For example, those beings that were born out of experiments where they steal our ovules, the sperm. In that way, they produce the bodies and then give them the shapes of reptiles and of those extraterrestrial beings. And sometimes they put these essences, a part of these beings, so they do whatever they want with them, slaves, to create energy, to make laborers slaves. How do they do that? In the room, they tricked me. They told me that from there I could project to wherever I wished to go. Here, I can't see whether I'm a man or a woman. I entered the room, and when I was in, I lost consciousness. I forgot everything. I could not remember a thing. Caligero asks, can't you leave? She says, yes. Then do so. So that my whole essence will join my body? Yes. She says she has a cheerfulness. Did you get out of the cylinder? Yes, and that's why I feel cheerful. Caligero says it's a decision, an act of will, nothing more. You don't have to fight or nothing like that. Just will it. She says the implants prevent her from getting completely out. The implants are from the mantis and the dragon. Cal says, tell the dragon to remove every implant he's put in you. She says she only needs to disconnect from that room and remove the helmet she was wearing. That's all I need to do. The other implants are from the greys and reptiles. Cal says, they work for the dragon, therefore tell the dragon to disconnect everything completely and forever. She says they are disconnecting everything, but I see my mother. She's my hangman. They use her as a hangman. Her body is alive, but her essence is lost. She interferes with her by doing witchcraft, those sorts of things. Caligero says, all this won't bother you anymore as soon as you make up your mind, as soon as you're not compatible anymore with these frequencies. Your mother does her things and you do your own independently. Therefore, simply cut every energetic bond you may still have with your mother. She says her mother's leaving, and Caligero says to explain. Griesel says, in my hands I used to have a sort of bracelet with a glove covering my back and shoulder, connecting to the heart part of the lung, and it was through this device that this body was kept alive. But now she's disconnecting everything. Caligero says to tell the dragon to remove all of the implants and tell me what he removes and how he does it. She says, he's removing some sort of boots from me. On my ankles there were some kind of bracelets. On my knees there were some tiny devices. There was something also in my uterus. At the level of the coccyx there was another. In the stomach it looks like a liquid, something mushy, gray-green. The heart is connected to the bracelet. Another bracelet on the right hand, right fist. A tiny device in the shoulder and elbow. In the throat, and here in the nose, and in the ears, and the helmet, and a plaque in the brain. It was in the head. There was something in the head. Caligero says, now call the mantis and tell her to remove her implants, whatever she put in your body, all that pertains to her, out, and tell me what it is about and what she does. She says, whatever I had in the uterus, in the colon and rectum, some mushy stuff, they were meant to arouse sexual energies. He says, now tell the dragon, the lizards, the greys, the mantis, and the felines to get out of your energetic sphere forever and to cross over through their dimensional portal and tell me what happens. She says, it's as if something had sucked them in. They're gone. Only the spirits remain. He tells her to open a dimensional portal at a frequency of peace and tranquility and invite them to enter and tell me what happens. She says, my mother is there. He says, invite her to enter there. She says, some are telling me to help their partner. Calogero says they can do it themselves, but if they want to do it, they need to get out of there. Cross to the other side. Invite them to enter, and when they are all in, let me know. She says, they are gone, but there's still someone here. I can't see him. Calogero tells her she can. She says, one of the felines didn't want to leave. He was the cause of those fears. Calogero says to him to be gone. Done. Now open a dimensional portal at the frequency that you like at your optimal frequency and get out of there. She says, what's inside her mother is something else, and she is possessed. He asks to speak with her mother's essence. Elizabeth, you have to recover your physical body because in this moment it's as if it was possessed by someone else. I believe it's a human being. You tell me, who's that? She said, somebody I made a pact with. For me, it was a demon. I made a pact with him, and when I underwent a surgery, he got in and possessed my body, leaving me in a place I didn't know. When I was young, aged 14 or 15, I wanted to escape from the life I was living, and the only one I found was him, and he had me seal an agreement to get out of this life, and I succeeded. He didn't tell me immediately, but in the course of the surgery, I left my body, and he told me that the payment was to take over my body in exchange for this help, and he didn't allow me to take back my body. Calogero says, stand in front of this being. Now I teach you how powerful you are. You'll show it to them yourself if you want. Tell them that you break the pact, that's all. Nothing else, and then tell me what happens. She says, he doesn't want. He says, Cal says, we don't care. You do want it. Tell them to cancel the pact, to destroy it. For you, he doesn't exist anymore. He must go, disconnect from you, and get out of your body. Watch what happens and tell me. She says, it's a sect. He's getting out of her body. Calogero says, have you seen how easy it was? Do you know that will is everything? You have been suffering for so long without knowing it. Is he out of your body? She says, yes. Now enter your body completely. Go there, recover it. She says, now he has no more power over me. And Cal says, that's normal. He never had power. Never. You gave it to him. He goes back to Greece. So she says there's still an implant in her head, so they run a checkup. So he tells her to tell them to remove it, and they do. So anyway, this Calogero Grafasi, he's got hundreds of regression sessions online on YouTube that are really interesting. A lot of them are, well, all of them are in Spanish, but some of them have some English subtitles. And anyway, it's pretty cool stuff. The last thing I want to touch on is I received an email from an out-of-body experiencer who's had extensive research with it. And he doesn't want me to use his name, but he said I could his YouTube handle, which is Unplug the Matrix. So he says, hey, I've been following your work for a while now, and you're absolutely right about the light being a trap. I've been having out-of-body experiences for about 4 years now, and I've seen things most people can't imagine, including the light. At present, I've seen it 7 times, both in dreams and out-of-body experiences. Every time I see the light, it tries to wipe my memory, unsuccessfully, of course. I found that everyone has the ability to wipe their own memory or someone else's memory in the afterlife. I've tried it on myself, and it worked. It caused my memories to start fading. The thing is that if you try to wipe someone else's memory and they don't want you to, they can resist through sheer force of will. This is why they can't wipe my memory. It's kind of like the Jedi mind trick. It only works on the weak mind. So for me, the light is bad because it tries to memory wipe people against their will, which I consider to be a form of psychic rape. It doesn't usually do this during near-death experiences, but there are a few in which it has. Most likely, these guys can tell whether someone is only temporarily dead or permanently dead, and they proceed accordingly. If they know someone is temporarily dead, they will most likely feed them a bunch of BS to reinforce a religious belief system. If they are permanently dead, they will most likely roll out the memory wipe to prepare them for reincarnation. In my case, I think they're testing me to see if the memory wipe will even work, which it doesn't. So anyway, about my experiences with the light. As I said, I've seen it 7 times. 2 of those times, it tried to pull me in. The first time, the light itself was pulling me in. The second time, there were invisible entities trying to pull me to the light. Both times, I was easily able to get away and got the hell out of there. I have considerable experience navigating the afterlife and dealing with negative entities. That's why I was so easily able to evade the light. A near-death experiencer, unfortunately, wouldn't have my knowledge and skill. So it would be harder for them, but they could still evade the light if they realized what was going on and didn't want any part in it. One thing I should point out is that there isn't just one light. There are lots of lights. I've seen them have different shapes, colors, etc. My guess is the light is a construct someone created to fool people. In the afterlife, thought creates reality. So creating something like the light would not be difficult. I've had out-of-body experiences where I created entire worlds. Anyway, I hope this information helps. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to send me an email. So, of course, I sent him. We've been going back and forth with a lot of emails, and I'm just going to continue to read what his replies were. He says, yeah, it's possible to lower and raise your frequency at will. If you end up in some negative astral world, you can easily leave by raising your frequency. I've been to what people call hell more than 15 times. It doesn't scare me because I know I can't get hurt. You also don't feel pain in the afterlife. At least it's very rare to. In the few instances where I felt pain, I was able to make it stop on command. Once you realize this, fear of going to hell goes out the window. Places like this only scare near-death experiencers because of their ignorance. Honestly, I've never been anywhere in the afterlife that was anywhere remotely as bad as this world is, and I've been to some pretty scary places. So whoever thought up the idea to use fear of going to hell to control people must have thought it was hilarious, not to mention ironic. In my experience, the lower the frequency that you're on, the more likely you are to end up in these type of places. I had an out-of-body experience once where I lowered my frequency on purpose. Shortly after, a guy showed up and told me he was there to take me to hell. I punched him in the face for his trouble. So yeah, you can easily do the opposite and raise your frequency, and then you won't run into negative stuff nearly as often. Also, it's important to realize that you can go wherever you want to. You can teleport at will, either between worlds or between two points in the same world. I have used this several times to evade negative entities by rapidly teleporting around them. Eventually, they give up and leave you alone. So you have a great deal of freedom in the afterlife. You can go wherever you want to. So just mindlessly going to the light is foolish and insane. So I asked him, I said, you created a world. Do you think it could be possible to get trapped into one if you projected your consciousness into one of the life forms there? He says, no, I have intentionally jumped into thought forms of people and other creatures I've created. I was able to take control of them, but I could leave whenever I wanted to. Generally, you don't have to worry about getting stuck in anything. I've fallen into black holes, and even they couldn't hold me. That is, of course, by far one of the scariest things I've ever done. From what I can tell, the physical world is unique. It's the only place where people have to deal with such insane limitations. In the afterlife, you have no limits. How exactly this world came to be, I'm not sure. I haven't seen any kind of net. Keep in mind, though, that you can move from one world to another at will, so a net wouldn't do any good. I have had a lot of out-of-body experiences in space, but unfortunately they weren't anywhere near Earth. I don't have any experiences in the real time zone very often. I did have one a few days ago where I was out-of-body in my bedroom, but I could barely see anything. There is something about the real time zone, and especially when you're near your physical body, that sometimes makes it hard to see and move around easily. It's like you're stuck in mud, but the reality itself is mud. It's really hard to explain. I can tell you this, in case you're wondering. I've seen a lot of planets from space, and they're usually round, although I've seen a few that were flat or semi-flat. I haven't seen the Earth from space, so I don't know what shape it is. I've also been on spaceships, which is really cool, but I haven't seen many aliens. All the time I've been on ships, there was either no one there or the crew was human. A few times, I actually created spaceships like how I create worlds. One such time, I was able to make the ship's engines disappear with a thought. So if you want to know how powerful you are in the afterlife, think Q from Star Trek. You can pretty much do whatever you want to. He says, I think it's most likely nefarious. Not that some people don't come here on their own, but most are tricked into it. And then he says, the thing is, if you like stuff like that, you can do it in the afterlife. Pretty much anything you can do here, you can do over there. You can eat, drink, have sex, get drunk, etc. You can do all the good things that people like to do here. So there's no point in coming here. And if you're someone who likes chaos, there are places over there where all they do is fight each other. It's like a war zone you might see in this world. Except over there, you don't feel pain. I've had my astral body ripped to shreds and it didn't hurt. The astral body is just a construct, so if it gets destroyed, you will usually go into the void. It's like a timeout zone where you can't perceive anything with your senses until you manifest a new one. So if it's conflict you want, you can find plenty of it over there. Sometimes it's just people fighting each other for entertainment like they're playing a video game. And then sometimes you run into entities that are much more nefarious. So you can play games of chance with other people in the afterlife without giving up your freedom. I've heard Robert Monroe once met a guy during an OBE who came here and got addicted. He lived a life as a Roman soldier and wanted to come back and do it again. personally, I think that's completely insane. That's like someone who just got out of jail intentionally getting arrested so they can go back because they're addicted to being in jail. Anyone addicted to this world needs serious mental help. He says, you can't erase someone's memories if they don't want you to. They've tried to do it to me during dreams and OBEs over a dozen times without any luck. Even in a dream state when I'm mostly out of it, I can still resist the memory wipe. I think the most you could do from the astral is to help the recently deceased so they aren't tricked into reincarnating again. Unfortunately, as long as there are people who are easily fooled, there will always be people trying to fool them. The only way it will stop is when people stop being fooled. He says, from what I understand, when someone is near death, the beings that run the whole reincarnation system descend on them like vultures. So you would have to be really quick to get to them first. Yeah, the normal way people communicate over there is telepathy. This takes two forms, telepathy with words and telepathy without words. When you don't use words, you're transferring ideas and concepts directly, and it is a very efficient way to communicate. It's also harder to lie when you're communicating like this, but not impossible. It is possible, though, to block someone from reading your mind if you don't want them to. And a lot of shady entities will do this when they're trying to deceive you. But if you know what you're doing, you'll be able to tell if they're honest or not. I had an experience a while ago where there was an entity near me, but it had made itself invisible. Something like that is pretty easy to do. But I could still sense its presence, so much so that I knew where it was and was able to grab hold of it, regardless of the fact that it was invisible. I could also sense its negative intentions toward me. So these guys are not all powerful. I've gotten into many confrontations with them in the astral and won almost every time. They operate through deception because that is the only way they could hope to control anyone in the astral. So yeah, I think they have a whole system built for knowing when people pass over, especially in hospitals. I was with my grandmother for her last week, and one night she was talking to someone and telling them her name and her birth date. And he replied, he said, yeah, stories like that are common. Strangely enough, I haven't run into any of my dead relatives while out of body, but most of them are crazy, so I really wouldn't want to. One thing I have noticed is that they are able to not only fool near-death experiencers, but also people who have out-of-body experiences. In some cases, they have even fooled experienced out-of-body travelers. They were able to fool Robert Monroe back in the day. And then you have people like William Buhlman, who I agree with on about 90% of what he talks about. But when he starts getting into reincarnation, it's clear he doesn't have a clue. So they are very skilled at deception. They can't fool me, though, and it's not from a lack of trying. I was watching a few videos on YouTube earlier today from people who've had out-of-body experiences and went to hell, and it's absolutely scared the crap out of them. Whereas I've been there more than 15 times, and it doesn't faze me. Just go to show how they use people's ignorance to manipulate them. I've done things while out of body that were far scarier than going to hell. And of course you have near-death experiencers like Howard Storm, who went to hell because he went along with a bunch of people he didn't know. Could have handled that situation so much better if he knew what I know. In a situation where you're surrounded by hundreds of negative entities, there are ways to deal with it. The easiest, of course, being just to teleport out of there. So I think the only way it's going to stop is when people stop being ignorant. The problem is that with a lot of people, the ignorance is held in place with either a religious or scientific belief system. Until people are willing to let go of their belief systems, they will keep making the same mistakes. He says, well, you can end up unintentionally manifesting your worst fears. I've done that and it's no picnic. Well, actually, anything over there is a picnic compared to this screwed up world, but it's still not much fun. I once had like 10 out-of-body experiences in a row, which would have been fun, but I kept unintentionally manifesting black holes because they scare the hell out of me. With good reason, I once saw one rip a planet to shreds from orbit. The good news is you can get rid of anything you create. I eventually learned to create and destroy black holes intentionally. Now I don't run into them as often. So you can manifest things that are really scary, but you can just as easily get rid of them. So it's not that big of a problem. He says, if you couldn't get rid of negative stuff you create, then it would be a big problem. Fortunately, that's not the case. I once had an out-of-body experience where I was in my bedroom, but there was a dog on my bed. At first, I thought this is cool because I like dogs. Then it started growling and acting like it was going to bite me. So then I disintegrated it with a single thought. The dog was nothing but a thought form. In the astral, you can create thought forms of people and animals and creatures or pretty much whatever you want. And interacting with them is just as real as two people interacting in this world. But they're not real people, and they're not self-aware. They're just a program. They're like a non-player character in a video game. You can usually tell the difference between them and an actual entity because with an entity, you sense a presence. With a thought form, you don't. you can do some cool stuff with thought forms. The only problem is that sometimes if you're not careful, they can go haywire. In such a case, you can either fix them by intending for them to revert back to the way they were, or you can get rid of them, which is what I did with the dog that was trying to bite me. If you couldn't do either of these things, there would be a whole lot of negative thought forms out there, and there are already, but it would be even worse. People create thought forms all the time without realizing it, and those thought forms can take on a life of their own. They will then seek more of the energy that created them, so negative thought forms will seek more negative energy. These things aren't a problem in the astral. You can get rid of them with a single thought, but they will often feed off of the energy of people in the physical world because we can't see them. But yeah, in the astral, you can create whatever you want, and if you don't like it, you can get rid of it. I once created my own hell world on purpose just to see what would happen. It was pretty interesting. It was just a really dark and creepy place. But when I was done with that, I created another reality that was much nicer, and the hell world I had created disappeared entirely. Now imagine if I wanted to scare the crap out of a near-death experiencer or someone who was recently deceased. I could bring them there and shape-shift into the devil and pretend to be the devil. That's exactly what they do. I can do pretty much everything they can do. That's why their parlor tricks don't impress me anymore. So the way I look at it is these beings are no different than me or you, except they have bad intentions and are very good at deceiving people. I think some of them are just thought forms, though. I ran into the Greys recently, and they have minds like a computer, so they may be just thought forms that are controlled remotely by some entity. It could create as many as it needed, and they would do its bidding because they are mostly mindless machines. Still, all the entities I've run into, the Greys, are probably the scariest. They definitely have strong psychic abilities, and they would easily be able to influence the minds of most people, but not me. I have way too much practice resisting stuff like that for it to work on me. I've had entities literally try the Jedi mind trick on me, but it didn't work because I was too strong-willed. So they actually tell you some of the stuff in movies. But anyway, I hope this clears some things up for you. If you have any more questions, let me know. He says, hey, you may be interested to know that I saw the light again. I saw it in a lucid dream. Dreams are actually low awareness, out-of-body experiences. I've had many dreams turn into fully conscious OBEs. This time, I was the one creating it. I was having a dream that I was with some people, and we were in some weird-looking place. So I thought we should go somewhere much nicer than this. Instantly, we ended up in the light. This time, though, it wasn't trying to wipe my memory. It had that warm feeling that near-death experiencers describe, and the colors were moving and shifting in spectacular ways. It was really beautiful. It reminded me of the Stargate SG-1 episode, The Light, which was obvious that it was really about the light people see after death. I always suspected that the light was just some kind of construct that they created. Now I know it is because I can do the same thing. I'll have to try to create it when I'm more awake during a fully conscious OBE. That would be really interesting. This is the only time I've seen the light and it wasn't trying to memory wipe me. I've seen it in dreams and OBEs and every other time it was trying to wipe my memory. My guess was that they can turn the memory wipe effect on and off. It seems that I was right. So when people see the light, they're just seeing something that these guys created. And you can create anything you want over there. I once created energy in my hand that had the effect of wiping my memory. I tried it on myself, and it caused my memories to start to fade. The light is just a much larger and more complex version of that. So knowing what I know now, if I was like them, which I'm not, I could easily create a white light and use my ability to shapeshift that everyone has in the astral to pretend to be God. I've seen other entities pretend to be God twice and do it very well, but they couldn't fool me. Unfortunately, most people fall for it. Of course, I would never actually do such a thing, but they would. I guess I really am learning all their tricks. I'm sure they're not happy about it. In fact, they frequently harass me in my dreams. They will often pose as dream characters thinking I'm too stupid to figure it out. But I can sense their negative intentions toward me. They used to try to just scare me, but that didn't work very well, although they still try it occasionally. I had a weird-looking entity jump me in a dream the other day. I just teleported away from it. But for the most part, they've moved on to being more covert about it. Still, when they're nearby, I can sense how much they hate me. They're freaked out because almost no one understands how they do and what they do as well as I do. But anyway, I think I understand how the light works even better now. It's a shame it fools so many people. Eventually, maybe people will figure it out. I'm glad I can help. I just want people to know the truth. I guess some people might come here because they want the challenge. But if you ask me, those people are out of their minds. Most people, though, are tricked into it. Unfortunately, so many people are so far gone that they wouldn't know the truth if it was glued to their head. Trying to inform these people is usually a waste of time. They're going to have to figure it out for themselves. and I damn sure wouldn't come back here for another round just to help them. I wouldn't do that for anyone. One of the problems of being an omnipotent being is boredom. I mean, just look at Q on Star Trek. He was always doing something crazy to keep himself entertained. Still, given the choice between boredom and pain, I would pick boredom every time. Coming here because you're bored is like sticking a fork in the wall outlet because you're bored. Neither is a good idea. He says, you actually talk to people you run into about this stuff? I'd be afraid they would try to have me committed. Like I said, most people don't want to know. The good thing about knowing is that you won't make the mistake of coming back here. I've gotten into dozens of confrontations with the beings that are behind this in the astral, and I won pretty much all of them. They are far from all powerful, and knowing they're out there and how to deal with them will save you a whole lot of trouble in the long run. You would think people would be tired of this crazy world and would want something better. Another thing to consider, though, is that some people might not even be real people. There's a theory that some people in this world are non-player characters, in which case they're pretty much just a computer program. Trying to inform them would be a waste of time. It's not in their programming. As I said, you see beings like this in the astral all the time. It's taken me a while, but I can usually tell the difference between them and an actual entity. That wouldn't be easy to do here, though. Regardless, the people that are real need to know the truth. I've had about 130 OBEs, give or take, but I have lucid dream all the time, too. I found that by using my abilities is the same between lucid dreams and OBEs. In OBEs, everything is just way more real because I'm much more awake. In fact, I often use lucid dreams as an opportunity to practice skills that I later use in OBEs. That's probably one reason I'm so good at this. I've only been at this for 4 years, and already I've seen and understand things that people who have been doing it for decades don't seem to get. It's something I didn't expect. Believe me, I wish more people who have OBEs got this stuff. I never wanted the responsibility of being one of the most knowledgeable people in this field, but it seems I have it regardless. He says, I usually have 3 OBEs a week, if not more. The truth is everyone has out-of-body experiences when they fall asleep. The trick is to either stay awake while your body falls asleep or to wake back up afterwards. I've done it both ways, but I usually do it the latter. I had one last week where I was half awake and all of a sudden I start floating towards the ceiling. Usually, though, I just fall asleep and wake up in another reality. I've noticed that when you're half asleep and you stop perceiving things through your physical senses, that there is a phase shift that happens where you switch to your astral senses. Most people are too out of it at this point to notice, but I've trained myself to be awake enough to observe this. The wild method of lucid dreaming takes advantage of this to help people have lucid dreams, but I've been able to use it to have OBEs as well, so I think that's the best way to have OBEs. I have no idea why anyone is here. You can find that out when you leave this world and can access all of your memories, or you could be hypnotically regressed to just before you were born. There are some people who do that. Unfortunately, most of them don't get what's going on either. You won't come back here just because you think about it. When I'm in the astral and I want to fly or teleport someone, I have to actually want and intend to go there. It doesn't happen just because I think about it. I had a lucid dream recently where some lady had me tied to a chair. She told me to answer her questions or else. While this was going on, I was thinking that I could teleport behind her and surprise her, but I sat there and let her ramble on for a few minutes knowing I would have the upper hand. Then when she threatened to electrocute me, I teleported behind her and knocked her out. I didn't teleport behind her when I first thought about it because I didn't actually want to. Intention is how you get around in the astral. If you think about a place but don't actually want to go there, you won't go there. It's like if you think about moving your hand but don't actually want to move your hand isn't going to move. So I hope that makes sense. Yeah, it's ironic. There's more access to information than ever, but people are more ignorant than ever. Unfortunately, I think that's because most people want to be ignorant. The best you can do is help those who want to know the truth. He says, most of the entities I run into are not interested in talking. They're either trying to scare me or trying to deceive me, neither of which works. I've read Michael Newton's book, Journey of Souls, and there is some useful information in there, but it's obvious that neither he or the people he regresses has much of a clue about what is really going on. Yeah, it took me a while to learn how to get around in the astral. It took a while just to learn how to fly. Now I'm pretty good at it. And I didn't learn teleportation until later. It's even easier than flying, though. The thing is, limiting beliefs will hold people back more than anything. If you believe that you can't fly or teleport, you're going to have a hard time doing it. I once questioned my ability to fly in midair, and it caused me to drop like a brick. In the beginning, though, I had trouble just getting off the ground. So if someone has a lot of limiting beliefs when they leave this world, they're going to have a hard time getting around in the astral. Most likely, if they run into scary-looking entities or end up in one of the many scary-looking astral worlds, it's going to scare the crap out of them. you see this with near-death experiences a lot. An experience that wouldn't faze me scares the living hell out of them. There are some things in the astral that scare me, but I can count them on one hand with fingers to spare. That said, none of those things can actually hurt you. They're just really scary. The point is that this guy wasn't informed enough to know how to get around really well in the astral. Oh, I sent him the link to the one of Caligero's hypnotic regressions, and the guy, I don't know, he got lost. Yeah, the one guy that they end up reincarnating. He says, the point is this guy wasn't informed enough to know how to get around really well in the astral. Even if you're someone who lies and cheats, you don't have to come back here. You will have trouble getting to higher frequency realities, but there are plenty of lower frequency ones you can go to that are pretty nice. You don't automatically go to hell because you're on a low frequency. I had an OBE once where I intentionally lowered my frequency. I could still go wherever I wanted. Now, if I wanted to get into higher frequency realities, I would have to raise my frequency. But that wasn't my goal at the time. So it was pretty much ignorance that led that guy to reincarnate again. You can be someone as nasty as Adolf Hitler, and as long as you know how to get around in the astral, you can leave this world and never set foot on it again. Of course, this world does attract people like that, so it doesn't surprise me that someone like that would come back here. People like us, though, that just went out of here won't be coming back to this hellhole. He says, man, I just retrieved what I think is a pre-birth memory. I was having a dream, and in that dream I was in the astral just minding my own business when a bright light shows up all around me and wipes my memory. Then I end up here. I somewhat remember reincarnating, and it was like being born into heavy mud. So I think my subconscious is trying to tell me something. If this is true, then they ambushed me, wiped my memory, and brought me to this hellhole. Well, that's never going to happen again. No wonder they are so concerned that the memory wipe doesn't work on me, because if that's how they plan to get me to come back here, they're going to be very disappointed. I'm very good at resisting the memory wipe. I've had a lot of practice. If they try this again, I'll be ready for them. I'm not sure what I asked on this next one, but he said, just through sheer force of will, the stronger your will is, the less effective the memory wipe is. It's like the Jedi mind trick. It only works on the weak mind. He says, speaking of sheer force of will, I just had a dream that I wish that I was with some strange people. Then this woman comes over and gives me an injection. It wasn't a needle. It was more like a hypo spray in Star Trek. Whatever it was just went through my skin. Turns out it was a sedative. But before it could knock me out, I could sense how much this chick didn't like me. It wasn't like she was bothering to hide it anymore, so I fought it off. And while I was doing that, I got into a fist fight with her, and I was winning. She told me how annoying she thought I was and that I should just give up. Then after a few minutes, I woke up. So that was pretty crazy. I had to fight off a sedative while fighting her at the same time. It takes willpower to do that. These bastards must be awfully afraid of me if they keep messing with me in my dreams. They aren't there every time I fall asleep, but they're there a lot. It's getting very annoying. But anyway, during this dream, I was able to resist the sedative the same way I resist the memory wipe, through sheer force of will. If your will is strong, they're going to have a very hard time influencing you. I told him, I have dreams where I am harassed. I have to defend myself verbally, and I asked him, can't you set your intention before you go to sleep to only go to the higher dimensions and not the lower astral where we are harassed? And he says, that's a good question. I don't know. I'll have to try it and get back to you. I know that when you're dreaming, it's possible to take control of it and go wherever you want, but you have to be awake enough to do that. He says, if you can wake up during dream states, all kinds of interesting things happen. If you're dreaming and you wake up more, you're now having a lucid dream. And if you wake up even more, you have an out-of-body experience. Dreams are just low awareness out-of-body experiences. I've had dreams turn into OBEs, and OBEs turn into dreams. I have more lucid dreams than I do OBEs. But I find that lucid dreams are a good time to practice the skills I use during OBEs. If you can learn to get good at flying, teleportation, shape-shifting, manifesting, etc. during lucid dreams, you won't have any trouble using those abilities when you start having OBEs. I had a lucid dream last night that was pretty trippy. There was some chick throwing small black holes at me. I managed to dodge them for a while, but then one got too close and I started getting sucked into it. But then I thought, if she can get so close to these things without getting sucked in, then so can I. So I intended not to be affected by the black hole's gravity. After that, I stopped feeling them pulling on me. I even went right through one with no trouble, although it was still really scary. Now, if I run into another black hole during an OBE, I'll be able to deal with it better because I learned this trick in a lucid dream. So I found that if you make use of both lucid dreams and OBEs, you can learn things a lot faster. I find one of the most fun things to do during lucid dreams and OBEs is to practice doing crazy super power that you've seen people do on TV. I've done most of Superman's powers and most of the Flash's as well. Flying is fun, but running down the street at supersonic speeds is pretty damn awesome. I'm moving that fast, it's like I have superhuman reflexes. It makes it so I don't crash into anything. Other times, when I'm running really fast, it's like everything slows down. The faster I move, the slower everything else gets. It's pretty much just how like how they show it on The Flash. I always wondered how he could run so fast without crashing into anything. Now I know. So having superpowers is really awesome. There was also one time where I was being shot at during the OBE, and I caught the bullets with my bare hands like Superman does. That was pretty cool. And then one time during an OBE, I was in a cathedral, and I wanted to get outside, so I flew straight up and smashed through the ceiling with super strength. I also once ripped a huge machine apart with my bare hands. The interior of it was super hot, but it didn't bother me. The thing with extreme temperatures in the astral is that you feel extreme heat or cold, but it doesn't hurt. That's one reason why fire and brimstone isn't very scary. The one thing that Superman can do that I haven't tried yet is X-ray vision. That would be really awesome. I've been able to zoom in with my vision, though. So, yeah, I think it's really awesome. Just try to do superpowers during lucid dreams and OBEs. You'll definitely learn really interesting ways to deal with negative entities, and you'll find there's nothing you can't do. I asked him, have you been able to affect your life here on Earth to manifest or manipulate your reality here? You know, give you an extra inch or two in length or girth, haha, get a job, attract the girl of your dreams, etc., or gain intel on our prison here? He said, I wish. It's impossible. He says, it's possible to affect this world, and there have been studies done where a small group of people working together can make significant changes. The more people, the more they are able to affect things. One person can influence reality, but it takes more time. People who practice magic are probably the best at doing this. This world is just a much denser and slowed down version of the astral. It's like comparing water to ice. You can still affect ice, but it takes more time. And the more people you have trying to affect the ice, the faster it changes. So I hope that makes sense. I said, I'm wondering what you make of this regression session an Italian hypnotherapist named Calogero conducted with the patient, especially the part near the end where they are arguing about the need to come back to Earth to awaken souls. And he says, that's pretty crazy. Where did you find this? My first thought is that this person was tricked into coming here. They tell him some bullshit like you should go to Earth to wake people up, knowing damn well he probably won't remember any of it. You have to give these guys credit. They were really good. I would have told them where they can shove it. Their days of fooling me are long over. It seems the guy who was doing the regression wasn't a fool for a change. He realized this too. Also, this person came here because they were bored. That's like going and living in a war-torn third-world country because you're bored. No one in their right mind would do that. In my experience, if you get bored in the astral, there are plenty of things to do that don't involve coming here. So I think this guy was being played big time. I may have sympathy for the people who are asleep on this planet, but I wouldn't come back here to help them. My experience, most of them are beyond help anyway, so what is the point? Most of them want to be ignorant, so they are going to have to figure it out for themselves. Personally, I don't think there's any good reason enough to ever come back here. If some being shows up after I drop dead and tells me that I should come back here for whatever reason, I'll tell them that they should put their money where their mouth is and go there themselves instead of bother me. Actually, I want to insert something right here. Calogero actually did ask that person why he doesn't go back himself to do it, and the person said that, or the entity said that he's already been through all his incarnations. So I just didn't include that. There was so much, but he's absolutely right about that. Why didn't you tell them to go do it themselves if it's so important? They try to force the issue. I'm well prepared to defend myself, and I have a lot of experience in that department. Besides, they would have to catch me, and since I can fly and teleport and run like the Flash, that would not be easy. I've spent years training during lucid dreams and OBEs for the day I drop dead, and when that day comes, I would be ready. And then he says, hey man, I just had a really interesting OBE. I was walking through this creepy looking place when something shaved part of my hand off, which actually hurt, by the way. But probably not as bad as getting your hand cut off here. One of the people I was with said that doesn't look good. I said, no, I'll just grow it back. And that's exactly what I did. I grew part of the hand and one finger back. By this point, I thought I was dead, which is strange considering how many OBEs I've had. Apparently, these people were expecting trouble. But I was perfectly calm because I thought I was dead and nothing could hurt me. I told them, hey, I'm dead. I've got no worries. And when trouble showed up in the form of weird-looking monsters, I just floated around and barely paid any attention to it. They didn't seem to notice me either. It was really weird. So this got me thinking. If I can choose to not be affected by the gravity of a black hole, maybe I can choose to not interact with the people in whatever astral world I'm in. I've seen other entities make themselves intangible. I once did it myself during an OBE. So what if when you run into negative entities, instead of fighting them, you just turn into a cloud or something, or like a force ghost from Star Wars? I once saw a bunch of entities that looked like that. I've also had entities make themselves invisible to try to conceal themselves. If you can become invisible and intangible, they wouldn't be able to catch you because there's nothing for them to grab onto. Combine that with teleportation and super speed, and they would never bother you again. I know this. It was peaceful, just not giving a damn. I didn't care about the monsters because I was beyond them, because I thought I was a ghost. So if we can make ourselves intangible in the astral, maybe that is the key to avoiding all this crap. Maybe it's as simple as just choosing not to be affected by people in the environment, like how I chose not to be affected by the black hole. It's certainly worth trying. I'll have to experiment with this in future OBEs. I'll let you know if I learn anything interesting. I wrote back and I said, I think the answer is to immediately keep raising your frequency until you're completely out of the lower heavens. I may be wrong, but I think all the evil entities have a lower vibration or frequency. And he replied and he says, no, you're not wrong, and that works too. I just like to learn as much as I can, so I'm prepared for anything I might run into over there. So I asked him, what's the highest you've raised your frequency? What did you see or perceive? Did you encounter a barrier or travel through a membrane, veil, or tunnel, wormhole in doing so? He said, I haven't really tried to do it that much. I did intentionally lower my frequency once, and that was really weird. Hey, I had an OBE earlier where I created a thought form of a beautiful blonde chick. It was pretty awesome. She looked and acted just like a real person. And then she kissed me, and it was just like kissing someone here, but way better. It was amazing. I've done this many times, but it never gets old. I've also had mind-blowing, amazing astral sex that is way better than physical sex. I've also gotten drunk in the astral. So if we can do all these things over there, what the hell is the point in coming here? And I replied, I said, there's no point. We're being tricked and fed off of. And I sent him the regression that Calogero did with, which one was it? I don't know. One of the better ones. I can't remember which one. And he replied, he said, this guy definitely knows his stuff. I'm guessing he doesn't speak English. Where did you find this? Because I'd like to read as many of his regressions as I can. So that's it, Adam. That's a lot of information to take in, I know. But I wanted to give these examples because they are really illustrating what a lot of these lies these entities will use to try and trick us on the other side, and also that we have the power of just using your own willpower and your free will to, you know, just, I don't know, teleport away or raise your frequency to where you can leave this matrix.
A lot of information, man.
Sure was.
I'm exhausted.
You think you're exhausted? I kept thinking I was going to lose my voice.
Exhausting, isn't it?
It's a lot of, yeah. I probably should have summarized it and edited it down. Well, but I think that, you know, there's really good stuff in the details. Every little thing is important sometimes.
Yeah. No, it is for sure. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in there to get people thinking for sure. Absolutely. Yeah, amazing material as always. I got like a million questions, but that's okay. In another 4 hours.
Yeah.
To go over all that. It was interesting way back at the start, the EVPs, because that's a pretty common one. I remember kind of growing up even with the old TV set, you know, when you would kind of go to sleep with the TV on and the networks would the log out for the night and you'd wake up and it'd just be that white noise on the TV, you know, the shh.
Yeah, they're like probably talking to you while you've fallen asleep in your recliner, you know.
Yeah, that white noise of the TV.
Go to the light.
Yeah, well, it was the Poltergeist movie, but it's, yeah, it was like if you stare at that and listen to that in headphones, you can hear things and it's you can see things in that. And so it's an amazing phenomenon. And you talk about possession there as well, and EVP being a bit dangerous and stuff like that. I can see that. It's a common theme that I think now that this devil or whatever they want, whatever you want to give it a name, whatever you want to call it, seems to be in the technology itself.
It's a tempting lure, because I was reading watching some of the Peggy Kane stuff, because she did reverse speech, and I wanted to hear what she had come to conclusions about. But she was also doing EVPs and putting recorders out and hearing these voices. I'm thinking, well, that's interesting. But I mean, it's a lure, because you don't think that they're going to be like taking over you and talking, like even after you turn off the recorders, all of a sudden you're being possessed 24/7 and you can't get rid of them.
Seems like a way for them to get at us in this life anyway, and it seems like more and more of the planet seems to be getting bogged down in this digital mud, and connected to technology itself. And for me, it seems like this devil or whatever it is in the technology. It's in the computers. It's in the machines. And that's sort of an old fashioned way, but it's been in a lot of horror movies and things like that. As I said, the poltergeist. But it does make sense that it would be a way for this thing to connect or grab us through the EVP. Yeah. So it's a fascinating field. And
in the movie The Poltergeist, that was one where she was the psychic was telling her not to go to the light. Remember, the light was like the central theme of that whole Poltergeist series. Remember that?
Out of the technology, yeah. Yeah, it was sort of out of that, it came to be, but with all the Wi-Fi and all this technology around us, it's like a spider web. It's invisible, but it's like this digital spider web all around us, you know?
Yeah.
And it's almost like it's getting us stuck in this web, but we're not aware of it. And I think it's going to be easier for us to be eaten away and broken down if we're stuck there like that, you know?
And Ray Kurzweil was saying that the next stage of evolution for mankind is for us to connect our neocortex with the cloud, you know, so that's more technology there. I mean, we're going to become, if they have their way, we're going to become like cyborgs, you know, mm-hmm. or robots. At what point are they going to be able to just flip a switch and all of a sudden you can't even think for yourself anymore?
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. I would... just having a look what it was called. I'd recommend a movie, a new one on Netflix called Anon, A-N-O-N, science fiction movie, because it's exactly what we're talking about now, set in this dystopian future where people are totally connected and no one has any privacy whatsoever. I watched it last night. It was the technology side of it and people, what they have, how they connect them. It's sort of a Blade Runner sort of dark look at the future, but it's made well in that way if anyone's interested in watching that, because I think they do show you this sort of stuff in the films as you were talking about. But it's amazing, so much to go through. But the EVP is a very deep one indeed, yeah, for sure. And what would you we'll wrap things up, but what would you say for people who are interested in this, what should they prepare for in that afterlife experience? It's, I always thought kind of, you know, it would be like dreaming, you know. People are so scared of dying, but I always sort of liken it to dreaming, and I think every night you go to sleep and you dream. It's like right. It's in the Matrix. Morpheus says that. What if you had a dream that was so real and you couldn't wake up from the dream? How would you know the difference between the dream world and the so-called real world, you know? And it's like, I wonder if you're asleep and you're having this incredible deep dream and you die in your sleep, would it just go black and cut off, or would you continue dreaming like that, or would it get cut off and you would be placed in an afterlife experience? As well, and as because you're talking about this, that there seems to be these beings that can take on many forms. It seems like they're wanting to work a way around to trick you to continually recycle and come back to the earth when you don't need to. I'm wondering what people should prepare for.
I think that the man I was corresponding with through email, I think his use of lucid dreaming and OBEs is really helping him to prepare for the worst case scenario. I mean, I know that near death experiencers say that you have like a hyper consciousness when you die, that it's like everything, it seems more real than this reality, and that you've got your hyper alert and your hyper aware. So I think it's like higher frequency, it's higher consciousness. So the dream state seems to be lower consciousness, where you're like falling asleep, you're going into lower states of the mind, you know, the brain state, like the theta and the delta, whereas I think the near-death experience, you're more up into the higher frequencies, such as beta gamma and beyond. So, but I do think that, you know, all the OBEs that you can have will help you. So I'm going to like try to have them. It's not an easy thing to do, at least for some of us. And I know I tried to focus on having an OBE and I wasn't successful, but I started remembering like three dreams a night, which, you know, is like, I think it is true where your intention is, where your intention goes is what is going to direct your reality. So you just got to keep trying it. You know, like the person that was doing the EVP, and it took her a month before she heard any voices, and all of a sudden they came through. You got to stick at it, whether it's meditation or any of that stuff. You have to maybe stick with it for weeks or months until you have breakthroughs. And most of us are so impatient, myself included, that we, you know, we live in this world where it's instantaneous satisfaction. So
it's, I've woken myself up from dreams and you know, been in the dream and not liked the place and woken myself up, been consciously aware that I was in a dream in a weird way. It's hard to explain, but it's I've had dreams that you know, were really good dreams, but you know, where you have you might have the water around you, or you know, just the air or the water seems more clear. It's different. You know, it's interesting what he was saying about the ice and the water. You know, and it's like this is sort of a slowed down version, and you need to do more of an effort with more people to break it down. It just seems like this dreaming state is more clear. More crystal clear in a way, in some instances. So it's a strange thing to me as well, the dreaming world and this so-called real world that's been built around us. Anyway, a lot of amazing information. But I guess as we always, a common theme that we always talk about is the fear, people taking fear into those experiences and afterlife experiences. And also the manifesting, these, you know, being tricked and being shown things. I guess what you strongly believed, we always talk about that, what your beliefs were.
And it seems the religions.
They can change and shift and shape shift and show you things that they want you to see, but you don't really know what's behind the cloak.
I think the religions, you know, most, you know, probably 90% of the people on the planet, you know, subscribe to one of the major religions, and those religions, like, you know, in Christianity, they've got everybody convinced that when you die, you're going to go meet your maker, and then you're going to be judged. And so if, you know, like in that one hypnotherapy session where the person goes and they see Jesus and he's on his knees and Jesus is saying, hey, you need to go back and do better, he's not going to question that. But it was really a reptilian entity that was posing as Jesus. And then in the Eastern religions, where the whole thing is about the cycle of rebirth and karma, and so it's easy to convince somebody. I mean, how many people can live a life of 70 years without, you know, doing some bad things? And so they show you those bad things, and, you know, if they're posing as a deity that's bigger than you, then you're not going to typically argue with them, you know?
So this council of elders that people sometimes see in the afterlife experiences, where they showed their life experience and then told that they have to go back eventually. I mean, the common theme from you is that coming back here is that we're being constantly recycled for some type of spiritual food or energy in some way. Something that we don't really need to be coming back, because you talk about this other astral realm being better than this, and we're wanting to come back all the time. It doesn't make sense in that way, does it? Why we're here? What do you think? Like when you die and you go into an afterlife experience and you do decide to come back, what do you think the timeline is there? When you do come back, do you get dropped in another body and your memory's been wiped, but it's still 2018 or 2019, or it could be many years in the future, or it could be the past.
It could be the past. They could probably convince you to come back in any time
era
that they want. But, you know, some people probably get reincarnated, you know, recycled in immediately, but then there could be, maybe you get a breather over there where, like, I think it was interesting saying that, like, maybe, like, in the Bible or something, it says, like, a 1,000 years here is, like, one day with the Lord. So, like, over there, like they were saying, it's just one day, but over here it seems really, 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 really long. But I have no plans of coming back here at all. I mean, there's just no way they're going to convince me that I need to come back here anymore.
I think that
is the one thing that they use, and that's our compassion, our want to help people that are in need, they're in trouble, and so they can exploit that, you know, our love, they can exploit that, and convince us, look, all these sleeping people down there that need saving, and, you know, that's a very good trick that they can use, I think.
Seems a lot of people seem to think to go your own way in that afterlife experience.
Well, and if this is a computer game, it's just a simulation, it's an illusion, which, you know, near-death experiencers even have said, then what's the point of coming back into this, into the game? If it seems like if you want to stop playing the video game, you just walk away from it, you turn it off, and all the characters on it, they don't really die, it goes to a black screen, right? They were just part of a game. They were pixels on a screen, they weren't really real.
Yeah, many people get so grounded, don't they? People are so grounded in this life to the point, you know, where they start to get older and they panic and they fear death and they start getting plastic surgery and trying to change their look and prolong that life experience. But it's just an experience, you know.
While you're here, you might as well make the most of it. You know, I don't fault myself for that. But you can't get too attached to the physical because
that's what I mean. They're very, very attached. Yeah. They're very grounded and attached to this earth because they think kind of that's all that there is. You know, it makes sense that they would come back. You know.
Yeah, and some of them are probably just wish they could have a second chance. You know, to do it right. They get another shot at it. You know, I'll get the girl this time, or you know, whatever. I won't make that mistake again. You know,
people with strong wills that want to finish things. Yeah, those kind of personalities, very strong personalities, wanting to continue to get things done. But there could be an ego thing as well. You know, wanting to constantly please the ego, which is like that dark passenger in a way.
Yeah, I think that ego is not even really themselves.
It's like an attachment, isn't it?
It is an attachment. It's these alien entities that, I mean, are doing most of the thinking for us. And we think, oh, that's my ego, but it's really this other entity that you're yoked here with. And your true spirit wouldn't have any of those, I guess, desires, for lack of a better word, you know.
The ego seems to bring all the karma and debt and the chains and bogs you down. You know, it's... a lot there, Wayne.
So the other thing about not coming back is it's like a dream. It's like if you wake up from a dream, I mean, were those characters in your dream really, really there? When you wake up from your dream, you think, oh, I was just dreaming that. That wasn't really real. You know what I mean? So that's another analogy to it. It's like, you know, you shouldn't have to feel guilty about not going back and saving all these souls in need because it's all an illusion. It's all a dream, right? It's all just a game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and like the person was saying, have you ever tried to help a drug addict in this world? And it's like you can't do it for them. And you can talk to them until they're blue in the face, but if they're that addicted or they don't care, you know, like he was saying, most of them are ignorant and want to be ignorant, you know. And what I'm thinking is, I'm here right now, and I'm doing as much as I can, and I'm leaving all these scripts, all this my website behind, and videos and articles and stuff, and hopefully that'll be there. It'll be there forever, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the Matrix.
In the Matrix, right.
Yeah. Well, there are lots to ponder, and we will plug out and obviously catch up again soon when you have another presentation to go through. How can people contact you? Best way, it's by email and through your website?
Yeah, by email, and my email is waynejbush@gmail.com. That's WAYNE, the letter J, BUSH@gmail.com. And I really love hearing from people, and that's how I learn. Most of what I learn is through other people's experiences and ideas. So most of what I presented tonight was based off of emails, you know, from Laura Morrow, where she told me about Calogero and, you know, and then the other guy that had all these amazing out-of-body experiences. So we can learn from them, you know. Calogero is doing some amazing work in hypnotherapy. I mean, I don't know how much of it's 100% true. I mean, you know, hypnosis gets into some sketchy areas too, but there's some amazing detail coming through. And if other people start doing that research too, and the information dovetails and is in congruence, then, you know, we need to start going into that area, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And your website's trickedbythelight.com, great website. And I was thinking these notes that you sent me on today's podcast is pretty much everything you went through. I could post them with the podcast for people.
I'll send you a new copy. I added a little bit to it. And, okay. Yeah, that'd be a good idea.
Yeah, that would be good.
On my website.
It's some people like to read as well, so if you've got another one there, send it through and I'll post it up with the podcast.
If
people sure. just want to read, yeah, it fills it out, the page. Anyway, thanks for your time. Great show today. Great speaking with you. And we'll keep in contact and do another show soon when you've got some more material.
Yeah, thanks, Adam. Always a pleasure. I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to share all this with people.
Absolutely, yeah. Great show, a lot to ponder. I'm just sitting here pondering, just thinking about everything. So it's always I'll go through it again, have a listen, and pick up on a lot of things that make sense to you. You know, everyone's different. So I hope our listeners enjoyed that, and we'll speak again soon.
All right, Adam. Good night.
Thanks for that, man.